All right, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
I'm Getting Louder.
I'm Puppy Shogun.
And I'm Feld Fangirl.
And we are a podcast all about anything and everything related to board and card games. So welcome to episode 121.
Or as we like to call it,
the one about the games of 2016. So, as you all can probably guess from the title, this is our annual look back on the previous year and where we get to name our discoveries of the year and games of the year. But we'll get to all that soon enough. But first of all, Happy New Year, everybody!
Happy New Year!
We're about 8-9 days late, but whatever. It counts. We're just after first night, so we're good. Okay, so what did you guys do for New Year's? I mean, I know what Jessica did, because that was at the same event, but what did you and TCU and Daryl do?
Typically, we try doing New Year's where we do a board game party, but no one was available this year. So we were like, well, we'll just go to someone else's house and hang out there. And that just turned out to be terrible. We got home at like 9.
Aww.
And we just kind of went to bed. It was just a bad night. So
you didn't even stay up to ring in the New Year?
No, we were exhausted at that point. So Caitlin is probably one of the most easygoing babies ever. And anytime we've taken her somewhere, she never has a problem falling asleep. Except at this place. She was screaming bloody murder constantly. And we're like, yeah, we got to go home and put her to bed. So that's what we did. So we didn't get to play any games, which sucks because that's like the one thing. It's like, what game do we end 2016 with and start 2017 with? It's like a thing every year with me. And I didn't even get to do that. Aww. So,
well, I'm terribly sorry.
No, you're not. You don't care.
That's more true than not.
TC, did you have to work?
I did. So I was in the high roller room.
Oh, really?
Dealing out cards to people who are sad and lonely on New Year's Eve.
I was wondering if it's like a sad and lonely thing or if there are just a lot of drunk people everywhere or what.
It's good. It's like whereas Christmas is like the wow. It's like pull out your heart and like what, this is the worst day ever.
Oh.
Yeah, New Year's Eve is like the best night to work. So even if like I always say like I do not hate my job. I like it a lot. It's fun. But, like, New Year's Eve and everything, if I'm going to have to work, this is, like, the best place to work. Like, if I had to work at, like, a gas station or something, I'd be so, you know, I feel bad for anybody who has one of those menial jobs at those times. Because that's the opposite, right? But everyone's there to have a good time. Everyone's there and drunk and wild. And we had people chasing each other around slot machines with, like, necklaces and I don't know, it was ridiculous. But I thought it was gonna be terrible because I was gonna be in the high roller room and everyone's gonna be snooty and everything, but they were all just losing money and still having fun and it was great.
Did you get big tips?
Not me, but everybody else did. Which is fine because we pulled them for blackjack stuff, so
as long as
someone's making money, that's good.
Well, so it's a little, got your little socialist banana republic working there. So that's cool. So Jessica and I spent Bitter Knish 1. Bitter Knish, or Chris Mosley on Twitter, he lives in Raleigh and decided he was going to throw an all weekend kind of little mini con. Started on Friday and going through New Year's Eve on Saturday and then New Year's Day on Sunday. And Jessica, you were there all 3 days.
Yes, I actually stayed over at his place, which was actually really great because I had just gotten sick a few days before. So it was nice to just be there and be able to sleep in and hang out all weekend in my sweatpants. It was awesome.
It was fun. It was a really good party. He lives in Carolee Mills, which anybody who's local might know. They're a pretty cool little reclaimed warehouse factory type of area, basically a mill that's been converted into apartments and condominiums, and that's the kind of place that I love, and the architecture is awesome, and his place is cool. We have plenty of places and rooms to game, and tons of local people showed up to game with us. Mm-hmm. What's some of the most memorable ones that you played while you were there?
Freaking bag builders.
Your bag builders? Yeah, you had your bag builders.
early on. It was the first time I ever played it, and I just wanted to punch it in the face. I
It's
just
so good.
stink at bag builder. I said, and a bag builder is actually one of my top five favorite games. But they hate me though. They just hate me, and I suck at them. And so playing it for the first time, I was just like so frustrated during the whole play. But we actually played it a second time that weekend too. So that was really memorable. And Lords of Vegas was really memorable too. I thought that game was really cool. Yeah.
Lords of Vegas is one of those that, you know, it's just, when I came in, y'all were in the middle of playing it, and I was like, I wish I had shown up like 30 minutes earlier so I could got in on the game because it's so much fun. But it was cool because you were playing with Matt and Marcy Wolf, who they had never played it before either. Mm-hmm. But Linus was teaching you being a shark. I mean, he scored ridiculously high. But yeah, it's good. It's on my A-team shelf for sure.
Yeah.
My big project after New Year's, I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter, but was to reclaim my great room from the overflowing amount of just
taken
mess.
Taken over by board games.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah.
So where does the rest go? I mean, for real, not just under the car or something.
No, for real. Okay, so you know I have Purgatory and Hell, my two closets.
Yep.
So I rearranged, reprioritized the main A-team shelf. I have a secondary, pseudo staging A-team area in my office, which has another set of shelves plus, a place next to it where the newer games come in that I rotate in and out that I need to play or I haven't opened yet. But I redid the entire organization of Purgatory, put a whole bunch of them in there, reorganized Hell, put a whole bunch of them in there. And so there you go. And now it's all organized and it's beautiful and it'll probably stay this way until the next con, which means it'll be PrezCon. I'm going to try not to buy too many games unless I think they're, you know, absolutely essential, or I know that Dan's not going to get a review copy or one of you guys won't play or get one to play. But I feel good because it's something I've been wanting to do for, man, almost a year, year and a half now. And it's nice. It's nice to have organization. My goal by the end of 2017 is to probably pare down to about half of the board games I have in the house.
Maybe now when I come to stay at your house, I won't get a text right beforehand. Please excuse the mess. Every time I come over, he's like, it's a disaster. Please excuse the mess.
It is a disaster. Not anymore. Not anymore. It's great now. It's awesome. I can't wait. Can't wait to host the next game day. That's how exciting it is. Yeah. So, but yeah, but anyway, playing Lord or seeing you guys play Lords of Vegas. Lords of Vegas is one of those that has been one of my top games for a long, long time. It's just a lot of fun to play. We played a bunch. A couple of these we'll get to later that are going to be in our Games or Discovery of the Year list. But we got to try out my advanced Thunder Road. After I got Thunder Road from Daryl for Christmas, I went and made some advanced rules and some cards for upgrades, and we just tested it out. And it was fun, but it needs a lot more work. So I'm going to try to do some tweaks and stuff, and I'll bring it with me to PrezCon. It was a Thunder Racing type game. So we played Thunder Alley that night, right at midnight, mm-hmm. which was
yeah,
a ton.
Run on the new year with it.
Yeah, and it's always fun. And we had a nice spirited group playing that were... yeah, half of us had gotten into the George Dickel, and it was
and Fireball.
Oh, that's all.
So it sounds like a normal NASCAR night.
It was a normal NASCAR New Year's night, yes. Just watching cars go around the track and yelling at each other. No, it was awesome.
RIP number three.
So we also played Clank, which I'm sure I'll talk about more later. We talked a bit about on the Geek All-Stars, but we'll probably cover that a little bit more. I was not enamored with it. I thought it was kind of neat, the concept.
Oh.
What, you didn't like it, or you
I
liked it?
I love it.
Well, good for you. So, it has player elimination, so that's fun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got eliminated.
Probably why you did not like it.
No, I didn't like it. It's because I was clearly in the lead, and I just got... I actually put less Clank in the bag than everybody else, but because luck of the draw, Clank came out like one turn before I could move out of the safe zone. Move into the safe zone, rather. It just was just horrible.
Did you get eliminated before Mitchell?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No way.
I was the first one eliminated.
Well, because when I was watching the game, Mitchell looked like he was going to be out pretty soon.
Yeah, he ranked way, way up. Yeah. I was doing fine on Clank, and I wasn't putting much into the bag. And then all of a sudden, it was just like blam, 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 one after the other. And it was completely over. So, I don't know.
He had to buy cars to get rid of those Clanks, though.
I was trying. But the thing is mine was like, don't put Clanks in the bag, which was what I was doing. So,
yeah.
It's anyway, it's a neat concept for the game. I would definitely play it again, but it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, I want to play Super Mother Lode before that.
Oh, Super Mother Lode, I'd like to play. Absolutely.
What's that?
Another one. Another deck builder thing where you go underground and get stuff.
Ew.
And come yep. back.
Oh, I remember hearing. That's the one where Mother Lode is spelt funny, right?
Maybe. L-O-D-E, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Malode. Lode.
So it's spelled correctly, in other words.
Whatever.
Or it's typeface. Spelled, like, there was something typeface. About it being spelled wrong. Or maybe it was spelled L-O-A-D.
It's probably spelled L-O-A-D.
Yeah, then, that's what it that's, was.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, okay. Anyway, we won't get into the whole history of finding lodes and the mother lode and everything else with mining. I also played something very interesting. TC, I don't know if you've ever tried this out or not, but Detroit Cleveland Grand Prix, which is another racing game. A lot of racing that weekend.
That's not Nizia, is it?
No, it's oh, gosh.
Alan Moon or Kiesling or something?
It's one of those, it's a system. And Matt Wolf was telling me about it. It's a system that he came up with, and it's been used in a few other, Wolfgang Kramer. Yeah, so it's part of his Grand Prix system of racing, and that system has been used in several other different things. But this is really cool. I didn't know what to expect out of it, but the choices you have to make, because you're actually moving your cars plus other people's cars when you play certain combinations of cars, and then you bet on which cars that you want to support during the race. So if they win, then you get points for those. And anyway, it was super, super easy to play, but a lot of good choices. And It came out in 96, and the obviously the edition that Matt had was the one from 96, which looked like, well, we all know what graphic design from amateurs looked back in 96, especially this is a Mayfair game. So you can only imagine.
So it looked like Mayfair games from today.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it was like a global mogul, but with racing. but it was good. It was a lot of fun.
No, that's fun. That's. I mean, I would like to try it at one time. I just haven't got around to it. I was surprised that I played Elfinland a few weeks back. You know, that was like finally getting to play one of those weird old games that everybody talks about for a long time.
Yeah, the ones that come around in hushed whispers are like, oh, you seen this game? Somebody opens up a trench coat and go, hey, you want to play? You want to play some Elfinland?
Nice. But definitely open the trench coat regardless.
Right. And I'll just say we wrapped up the weekend with 5-player New Bedford, and unfortunately Jessica had to leave early to head out. but we wrapped it all up, and it was good. It was a super tight game, and we played with some of the expansion buildings, and it was nice.
It so wasn't it was... tight for my I feel really bad because I left an Adam Skelding out for me.
Fine.
And I was
you
like,
were You were only
set up for success.
No, but you were only 1 point. Let's say I think you were 1 point behind me, and I was only like 2 points behind Mitchell.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
I had like no whales. I was worried.
Mosley came like 17. He unfortunately had a not too good game on that, but it was still tight. I mean, from first to last place was only like 8 point difference, which is still pretty tight. But so we'll talk about, there's some other things a couple more things on here that will come up during our games or discoveries of the year section of the podcast. But I wanted to ask TC that you've been playing a lot of Mythos Tales.
Yeah.
So tell us what you think, because we played the first one together. Me, you and Daryl did.
Daryl 0.5. half of Daryl played. We played the first one, and Mythos Tales we talked about it a little bit last time, but like or did we? I don't know. I think we did. But
I believe we did.
It's very Sherlock Holmes consulting detective-y. So you're consulting different parts of a book whenever you go to a certain location and reading out the thing and then trying to figure out where to go next and try to figure out the crime or whatever the thing's going on that's weird. And so Sherlock, like, I guess we thought from the first one would be kind of X-Files-y. Like, sometimes it would be like, oh, well, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for this. but no.
No.
Okay. I've done 6 of the 8. Well, I guess there's 9. I guess there's technically 9. There's a prologue, too, afterwards. But yeah, after 6, there is no X-Files about it. They're all weird. They're all crazy, like science fiction, fantasy, Lovecraftian reasoning behind everything that's happening. So most of it has to deal with all the different, I think so far as like after the first 6, I have enjoyed playing the whole thing, right? Like, and we've been cranking through them. Like we said, we did 2 one night with, we sat down, had a specific old card table we were playing on with like a crystal ball off to the side, and like I couldn't find a sweater vest, but Tim had a sweater vest, and my friend Rob, he's got like these piles of games on the ground, but like everything was just made to like, yeah, it was good. And we were drinking whiskey. Yeah, we were drinking whiskey.
So it was a very thematic evening.
Yeah, it was a very thematic evening. And we went through 2 of them. And the certain cases are better than the others. The one that we played that was first kind of thing, we just followed. The first one's kind of like a prologue in the sense that like you just follow along and you do things. But like as it goes on, it gets more in depth. The cases start to require a little more detective work, like how do I piece this all together? But sometimes it's, I don't know. My biggest complaint with it is that it's gamey.
Is it really?
Yeah, they add in these weird, like all of a sudden, like you're playing and it's like Sherlock Holmes. You're like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then they add in the idea of going to a location and you might need something that you picked up at some other location. And it's actually cool. That part is really neat. Like you just go, hey, you just had this encounter. You just learned about like Frogman or something. And so you gain requirement card 2. And so you keep that around. And some places you've already visited or will visit may say, hey, read this passage if you have requirement card 2. So that part's really cool because it feels like you're actually doing detective work. But when you need a specific one and you can't find it and you don't find it and there's no way to get back to it and maybe a specific time of day is required for it and you can't possibly do it, it can get really frustrating. So
it sounds like it, yeah. Yeah.
We had, and there was one that introduced a concept of delay, which I'm gonna say right now is the absolute worst thing ever to introduce to a game like this. But it's basically when you would investigate a place, there's a chance that you could have to take a delay afterwards, and that would lose a day in your investigation if you chose, or you could just press on and you might get like sicker or whatever. So it was kind of this press your luck thing, and the way it resolved was absolutely the worst thing I've ever seen in a game. So don't do that. for game designers, I think it would be a great book for great, or I think it's a great game for game designers to play and see how designs of the 80s still have not gone away. And this is like, it's really punishing. It could be really punishing. But yeah, I've had fun. It's a little more punishing than like Sherlock Holmes sometimes, but like it's been a fun ride.
Well, I'm looking forward to digging into it. I enjoyed the time that we spent doing the first one, even though, you know, we definitely talked about some of the pros and cons of that one, and I knew there would be more to it. Daryl, I'm sure you enjoyed that first play, didn't you?
Yeah, it was the best. It was like, it was a dream. It was a dream.
It was a dream. Yeah, a lot of twitching and mumbling going on from his side. I thought he might have been possessed or lost.
I was part of the game. That was the thing. That was my secret agenda. And now I just spoiled part of the game for everybody. I'm so sorry.
One of the members of the party has to go insane and twitch and mumble. Catatonic, going into catatonic state. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yes. But, oh, hey, yeah, I do like, but I will say, if you like fan service to everything Lovecraftian, it is absolutely that. You're going to get to see every single type of creature and thing within the mythos represented and also trying to be put into the real world. I really like look at these cases like in a on a year's base. Like we played six, and that's within a year. They stopped the world ending six times in the year. This place is ridiculous. Like there are so many cultists doing weird things in this town.
That's just the way it is. That's the world of Lovecraft. I'm sorry. Well, what's interesting though too is like we mentioned this a bit too, where I think it takes a little bit of maybe I don't in later cases maybe not, but in the first one it takes a little bit of granted that you know a little bit about the mythos because there were questions that I could answer, but we didn't really find the answers in the actual investigation. But they were
it
there.
It keeps doing that. Like basically, it does a lot of like, oh, guess what? Here's this creature. And like, say there was times where I was like, man, I wish Chris was here because he would know exactly what we need to do and what's going on. Because then we would go to a location like trying to like we go to like the guy that's the specialist. And he would give us that information, right? Like, we would go, oh.
But it takes you a turn to go there and, you know.
This creature is this. He's part of this who does this thing. And you would already, you'd be like, oh, well, that's that person. And I already know all that stuff. So we could skip all that part. but yeah, for people who are unfamiliar with it, it at least gives you a way to understand it.
Yeah, and that's cool. And that's good. Because, you know, if you're going to play it, not everyone's going to be versed in the mythos. And, most of the people, I would say most of the people, but a lot of people played are going to be. So that's why you said fan service, which I think is kind of cool. So I can't wait to dig into it myself. But
don't get me wrong. You'll get real frustrated at certain points. So
fantastic.
Enjoy it.
Cannot wait. Well, has anybody else played anything cool they want to mention before we move on?
I played the first game of the new year was actually two games. one was King Domino, which I played at BGG Con last, and I got it for Leslie for Christmas because she's a big fan of tile games and kingdom building games, and mm-hmm. This is pretty much both. It's Kingdomino. Get it?
I get it.
So it's a Bruno Cuthala, and it's got a really cool like snake drafting method that you do to draft the dominoes, and you have to build a perfect 5x5 property around your castle. 5x5 squares. And so you have to kind of plan ahead on how you're going to build this out using domino shapes, and you have to make sure that at least one territory always lines up. Similar to playing dominoes. Specifically, I believe it's a bit more similar to like Mexican dominoes. Mexican train dominoes. Is that what it's called? Or just train dominoes?
Mexican train?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Mexican train. So it's a bit more like that, but it's quite enjoyable, and sure enough, my hunch paid off. She absolutely loves it because it takes like 10 minutes to play. So I think we played it like 8 times the other night, just back to back to back to back to back. And I won the first 2, and then she won all the other 6. So I was like, all right, well, there went that. And then the next day, she was like, what were the scores last night? And then I kicked myself. I'm like, damn it, my New Year's resolution was to keep track of more games, and I forgot to do it. I'm already failing. So I recorded all the ones I remembered on BG Stats. But yeah, so that was King Domino. The other one was Ethan got, he's into this cartoon series that is annoying as all heck called Yo-Kai.
Yo-Kai
Watch.
Yes.
And so Hasbro, in their infinite wisdom of, hey, that's a popular brand, let's just use the IP on everything we have, put out Yo-Kai Monopoly Jr. and Yo-Kai The Game of Life. So we got him Yo-Kai The Game of Life because Leslie's favorite childhood game is The Game of Life. And so we're like, all right, we'll get it. Well, it doesn't play anything like Life. It is Life in name only, and the fact that it has the spinner. But let me, little note here, Hasbro, you totally phoned in the spinner. Like, I remember the spinner being awesome quality back in the day, and now it sucks. Aww. It's terrible. Okay.
I think the spinner you remember might be a little bit differently, because the spinner in Life, yeah, it was big and chunky, but it always malfunctioned.
Yeah, but like the colors were assigned to the numbers, and now it's not. It's just a white piece of plastic that floats on top. So like when you spin it, like the colors are like half askew, and the arrow is printed on the board, and you can't see it because the spinner kind of half covers it. You're like, what? Like, I remember this nice big plastic chunk thing, and it's all gone. It's just the white spinner.
Well, so. I wonder if the regular Game of Life still has all that in it, though, because...
Probably not. I'm assuming this is the whole new mold, so...
Yeah, see, that's disappointing because, you know, you had little hills that you'd go over and the cities, yeah. The hospital. Yeah.
No, this is just a flat board. It is a big oval shape, so it's not rectangular, which was kind
of cool. I saw the tweet of it, which I was like, what the heck is that? Because it looked colorful, but then I said, oh, God, it's got yokai on it.
Yep. So that was, I will say it was actually a little bit more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be. It's still spin move. But you have your yokai watch. Every character player has a yokai watch. And you have to have it fully charged before you can catch your yokai. And then once you catch your yokai, it exhausts your watch. So you have to recharge it again. So you have to make sure when you're moving that you can land on certain spots. Because it'll give you like +2 energy, +3 energy. Versus other spots that are like minus energy. Because they're too exhausting to land on. And then there's like bonus abilities that you can pick up. That'll let you kind of give you a special player power, and you could choose which ones are available. And then there's event cards, which are just the cheesy ones of, you know, not so much go back two spaces, but steal a yokai watch or yokai medal from another player. Well, the whole point of the game is to get 3 yokai medals and end back at home. So that part was kind of sucked, because if you're working and, you know, you're doing everything right and you're managing your watch and your player power and all this stuff to get the 3 coins, and then someone just gets a card and goes, oh, cool, I'm going to take yours. And then they're heading back home first. It's a big disadvantage. But it was a little bit more meatier than I expected. Not that I'm saying it's a meaty game. It's not at all. I mean, it's a spin and move, but it was a little bit more to it. And Ethan picked it right up, so it was pretty cool. So,
awesome.
Yeah. I guess. Anything? That's a word.
I mean, you know, it's awesome you got to have fun with your family, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, anybody else to declare? Are we ready to move on to our best of 2016?
Yeah.
Let's do this. All right. Yeah, the drum roll. Okay, so... before we start running through our games of the year, let's talk about our guidelines. And we've done the Game of the Year podcast now. Well, gosh, I'm thinking now, February, we're coming up on the 6th year of State of Games. That's nuts.
Nice.
Anyway, so back way back when, I basically started presenting the Dice Hate Me Game of the Year Awards for games that were released during that calendar year. I did that on DiceHateMe.com, and then we started doing it on the podcast. The first year for the Dice Hate Me Game of the Year was 2010. Alien Frontiers took the celebratory first ever Dice Hate Me Game of the Year Award for that year. After that, the next years were Belfort, then Fleet, then Gravwell, Panamax, and last year, of course, was Swinging Jive Cat Voodoo Lounge, which had waited about 5 years for its title. Anyway, there's always been a Game of the Year and 2 runner-ups of the year, but I've also presented a Discovery of the Year Award, which is a way to award a game that was not released during that particular year, but which had been played and enjoyed a bit after it had been printed. So we all thought we would continue the tradition this year and present our top 3 games published in 2016 and our top 3 discoveries of the year. So... with all that said, we're going to basically present our discoveries first. We'll go to our second runner-up, and we'll do our first runner-ups, and then finally our discoveries of the year, and we can just go down the list. But you can kind of qualify why you like that game, or if one of us has a rebuttal, or likes to say, hey, great pick, then we'll do that. Now, the only guideline, just so people out there listening know, the guideline for the discovery is it simply could not have been produced and released in North American retail in 2016. Now, there are a couple that are a little mudgy on the release dates here. There might be a couple on our list that might be right on the border, but so give us a little, cut us a little bit of slack for that. But for the most part, I think we're all going to be pretty much within that category. Then we'll get into our guidelines for the game of the year after we do our discoveries of the year, and we'll talk about how TC is going to cheat on that one. But anyway, we'll get to that. All right, so starting with Jessica, give us your second runner-up for discoveries of the year.
All right, so my second runner-up for Discovery of the Year is a small little fantasy-themed dice and card game from last year from Game Right Games, and it is called Dragonwood.
Dragonwood, that sounds dirty, actually. But
oh, my my goodness.
I'm sorry.
Stop reading your movie shelf. Tell us the game name.
Oh, my.
So I've never heard of this game. I've never heard you mention it. Listen, I mean, maybe you mentioned it once, but tell us more about Dragonwood, the game.
All right. So this is just, it's a very light game. It doesn't take very long to play, but you end up drawing cards and they're all numbered and different suits or different colors. And you have to manage your hand to fight monster cards that are all worth different varying amounts of victory points. And in order to fight them, there are three different attacks you can do to fight the monsters. Is to strike, stomp, or scream. And to strike, in your hand, you have to have a straight. And depending on how many cards you have that are sequential in order, that's how many dice you get to roll. And then the sum of your dice has to equal or exceed the attack value of the monster. So then the other attack, stomp, is you have to have cards of the same suit. So if you have five cards of the same suit, then you get to roll five dice. And then the scream is you have to have a flush. And then depending on how many you have in your flush, that's how many dice you get to roll. So it's very light. Some of the monster cards are like cards that will give you an ability that you can continue using through the rest of the game. And then the game ends. There are two dragon cards. And the game ends and both of those are defeated and they're higher valued. They're higher in victory points and have a strong attack value. So you have to end up getting a lot of cards and some abilities in order to be able to attack those. So those can only be defeated later in the game, even if they're drawn out of the monster deck early on. So it's just very light. The art is pretty cute. But for some reason, when we pull it out, we usually pull that game out, you know, in between heavy games at a game day. But it's just a lot of fun. So that's Dragonwood.
Awesome. So that's, and again, I like these discoveries that we talk about sometimes, because sometimes I just totally miss games. A lot of people out there listening can be the same way. So Dragonwood. All right. So do you have it? Do you own Dragonwood?
No. Sean in my game group, he is a severe gaming addict and he gets all these games all the time. And so he has it and brings it all the time to game days.
So unfortunately we will not get to play it because you have sworn not to buy any new games in
2017. Maybe I'll borrow it from him and bring it to press one.
That would be great. All right, Daryl, what is your second runner-up for Discovery of the Year?
Founding Fathers.
Founding Fathers. Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Founding Fathers. So it's a game, it's a political game, obviously, where you're America's Founding Fathers, and more or less you're kind of, it's all about voting to try to get certain bills passed and to get more bills passed for your party than opposing parties. And it's very historical, where you have to, you want to play cards of certain founding fathers at the right time to help garner votes one way or the other. It's very dry looking box. It's very, you know, set up. You're just like, oh, really? But once you get into it, it's actually kind of fun. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I've heard since, and Mueller owns it, John Mueller, but I've heard that it is might be getting a reprint. So if that's the case, I am going to be picking that up.
I had heard some rumors about that myself. So,
yeah.
Well, that's an interesting little kind of good classic, almost hipstery choice from Daryl. Well done.
Thank you.
All right,
that's
TC.
That's the only one you're going to get from me.
The rest of them are like Game of Life, Clue.
Yeah. Damn it.
All right, TC.
Spoilers.
Does everyone fight over the Hamilton card now?
Forget Hamilton. I'm going with John Adams.
Am I the only one that's boycotting Hamilton?
Why are you boycotting Hamilton?
I don't know. It's just, it's so hyped up. I'm just like, well, I'm not going to listen to it.
It's hyped up on purpose. It's
like, I know.
It's good.
It's really good.
I don't like rap, so I'm just not going to listen to it.
It's really good. I'm not a hip hop aficionado. Except for indie weird stuff. But anyway, hey, you know what? We'll not talk about Hamilton, but you should definitely listen to it. You should also buy games, because if you're not going to listen to Hamilton and not buy games, I think you're dead to me. I think you might be completely dead to me. Anyway, speaking of killing people, my pick for Discovery was one that I picked up, which may cross it off the list, but just it has a special edition, which came out, I think, the end of 2015. So I don't know. But that's Escape from the Aliens in Outer Space.
I think that counts, yeah.
So I've always wanted to play this. This is similar to how that game Santorini had been around for like 10 years, like just as like a print and play kind of thing. And I never really felt like printing and playing. I was just hoping that a publisher would pick it up. Escape from the Alien Sounder Space has always been one that I wanted to play, and I finally just bought it. So I bought the new deluxe edition, which is good because now it has dry erase markers, and each person has their own pad. So kind of like, I mean, that's up to 8 players. So there's like 8 of these pads in here with different maps. And I think that's a good intro for it. It's a really stripped down, I guess, simple hidden movement game. And you're either at the very beginning, you're either dealt as a card that's face down that says you're human, and your goal is to try to get to an escape pod to escape from the aliens and get into outer space, I guess. Or you're an alien, and your goal is to stop and kill the people. And if you do succeed in killing somebody, which is like coming out, you kind of move faster than the humans and everything, then you get a bonus and you can move at 3 spaces. So the idea is the humans can only move 1 space a turn. The aliens can move twice, and every turn you draw a card, and it's either going to be safe, or you're making a noise, or you make a noise, or you fake make a noise. So it's a creaky station, so there's noises everywhere. So you draw this card, and it might be red, and it'll be, oh, and red's bad, because you got to say exactly where you are, and green's good, and you could say exactly where you are, or anywhere on the station you want. And then whoever, and so they people write jot down their notes as to where they think you might be, and everyone's just trying to figure out where everybody is, and the aliens are just trying to pounce on the humans, and the humans are just trying to get to the escape pods. Really simple setup. That's it. That's the game. But there's a lot of stuff to remember. There's a lot of things. It's hard to play the very first time because everyone is playing secretly. So if one person is just kind of playing and everyone else is playing right, like that one person's going to screw up. And then you can make mistakes. Like I made a simple mistake. Like I thought I was on a spot because I told a lie about where I was, but I wasn't actually on the spot. And then I was like, oh crap, I'm not on that spot. So I gave away some of my information, right? So, but otherwise, really cool hidden movement game with little markers and stuff. I like it.
It is definitely one that I've wanted to try. And you know, I love hidden movement as much as you do. So it's like one that I remember when you got it, and I just hate that we didn't get a chance to play it. So I'd definitely play it.
And the art's cool too.
Yeah, it's neat. I like and the box looks cool when you see it. You know, it's very stark and designery, which I like. Yeah,
very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I love. All right. So my second runner-up for Discovery of the Year, this one's going to be fairly, I don't know, not so necessarily obvious, but it was on a lot of people's like top of the year when it came out, and that is Libertalia.
Oh.
And yeah, it's one that I had heard. I mean, of course, when it came out, it had huge buzz, and I always wanted to get it, just never got a chance to get it. Whenever somebody had brought it to a convention, they had just finished playing it, and I wasn't able to get into a game, and everybody had said, like, you're going to love this game. And I'm like, I know I am, but I just don't know when I'm going to get to play it. Well, finally, this year, I was able to get it on the table. I believe it was PressCon.
Yeah, because we played it at PressCon, yeah.
Yep. And I've played a couple times since then, and it is just great.
It is a really good game.
It's fantastic. It's, you know, you're playing pirates, and depending on the game you're playing, you'll all have the certain same types of crew, but you're trying to draft and get the players into your hand and play cards through simultaneous play that aren't going to negate yourself with other people's cards. So you're trying to second guess what everybody else is playing, but also play them in a certain order. So you might have the upper hand and maybe have the only type of this particular pirate during a certain play of hands of cards. And of course, you're trying to get treasures, and you have also different goals you can do depending on your crew that will give you points throughout the game. And it's super easy to play, but it really keeps you guessing. And also it's got those moments where you just want to strangle somebody because they keep playing the same card you do. You know,
negates the ability or something.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, this is gonna be the greatest play ever, and then somebody, you're like, no, why did you do that? But the art's cool. The production is great. Unfortunately, my box got obliterated somehow, so it's all full of tape and stuff. But I don't care, because it is a lot of fun. So that is definitely my second runner-up. Again, it's one that was on a lot of people's lists, and probably a lot of people have played it already by now. But if you have not checked out Libertalia, find yourself a copy, get yourself a good group together, drink some rum, and have some fun.
And there's a really good implementation of it on Board Game Arena.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah. I like, because that's, if I ever do online gaming, it's always through BGA, because I just don't mess with all the rest of them.
Yeah.
All right. Back to you, Jessica. What's your first runner-up for Discover of the Year?
My first runner-up is a game from one of the standout years of board gaming, apparently, 2012. I feel like it's a game that a lot of people have already played, but I only just got it played a couple months ago, and that is Suburbia.
Suburbia.
So during the game, the rules explanation, I was like, I'm gonna love this game, and I could tell right away, city building, tile placement. And earlier in the year, I played a lot of the Castles of Mad King Ludwig, which is from the same designer, and I liked it, except I got really stressed out during the phase where you're having to have to price as the master builder or whatever. You have to price what all of the different locations are worth for people to have to pay for. And this game is like Castles of Mad King Ludwig, but without that part. So it takes that stress away. And so it was just a lot more stress-free and just fun trying to build up your city and make it the most efficient to increase your population at the end. So I had so much fun with this game. I only got to play it once, but I loved it so much that it made my list. So first runner-up.
I can remember playing this like way, way back in the day, like even before it was in wide release. Eric Martin had a preview copy of it, and yeah, it's pretty solid. It's not, you know, I think for people who have not played it, it's definitely worth checking out. There are other games in the similar vein that I think I personally would rather play, but I can totally respect, you know, you finding Suburbia, and especially seeing how cool it is with the city building and how you can combo off of different placements of your tiles and seeing how your city is going to kind of ramp up based on those combos.
Yeah.
That,
someday
of course,
I'll play that game.
Have you not played Suburbia yet?
No.
Wow. Oh. Okay.
Have you played Castles of Mad King Ludwig?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. But like you said, it was like, I mean, you don't have to set the prices in this game, right? Like, no. You don't have to do that. Yeah. No. So that sounds so much better, because, like, the castles, it just took forever.
Yes.
Every single time.
Yeah, it really did.
And so every time I've played, like, I've liked it a little less than the time previous. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm hoping that the Suburbia is a little bit lighter, a little bit better.
Yeah, the prices are set. So, and then you can see when new ones come out, that they just move down, so then they get cheaper. So you can wait to get one a little bit cheaper, but you don't have to set the prices. They're just set. So that downtime is gone, and the stress of that is gone. So,
yeah, I think that sounds better.
Yeah, the only drawback to time-wise or what might happen in Suburbia is that sometimes there are a lot of, like, accountings to be done. Depending on how many, you know, things are out that could combo on top of each other. So it's kind of nice to have somebody who's played the game before that can kind of keep up with those.
Yeah, and we played a 3-player game, and all of us actually looked at each other's boards to help make sure we didn't miss something.
Right. Yeah.
So at least, you know, even during that part, everyone was interacting. So.
Yeah, okay. All right. So that, of course, is from Ted Allspach at Bezier Games.
Yep.
All right, Daryl, your first runner-up for 2016.
Okay. It's going to be Celestia.
Shocking.
Really? You're really shocked at that?
No, I'm not shocked at that.
Kind of figured you would. I was expecting an argument on that one.
Why? It was almost made my list.
Well, because it was late 2015,
yeah,
early
really
2016.
Was
It's mudgy, which so, is why it's not on my list, to okay. be honest with you. But I will allow it.
Because, okay.
You know, it should be on one of our lists.
Yeah. So Celestia was... if you listen to the post-Gen Con episode, it was the blind sleeper from Gen Con. And I've played that game so much since then. And we played it all during the holiday retreat with everyone here. It's just a really, really good, solid, fun game. And so it's very much pressure luck, but it's kind of like a team pressure luck thing, as opposed to like Can't Stop, where it's just you by yourself for a while. This very much involves every other player for every single turn. So I don't know, it's just really, it's a very, 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 very pretty game to look at.
It is.
And then it's just very involving to play. So you never feel out and you never, it's not a game where you can really look at your phone while playing. And I like that.
More.
Yeah, you're just booing it because you can't take the pressure. What are you talking about?
I was like out of the game so early. It was just like, whatever.
Yeah, but it lasts like 15 minutes, so you can always get back in and do it again. It's just, and TC ran away with that game. He got really lucky on one of the couple of card pools. And you were sitting
and
there.
And I'm also really good.
Oh, he's super good at pressure luck, things that have to do with luck. But anyway. Yeah, exactly. Well, you, and another thing too is like, Jessica, you were sitting there with those cranes that can knock people out of the boat, and you just never used them.
There was no nice time to use them.
There's no nice time to use them anytime. You just use them.
Well, I didn't know that was my first play of the game. I was waiting for an opportune time for me, like, to be the like last two people in and kick that last person out.
That didn't happen.
Plus, you know, I don't like to be mean, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
What?
You have your moments. All right. So I think Celestia is a solid choice. Again, it's one of those that's kind of tough to judge whether it's truly a discovery or whether it would be a Game of the Year contestant. But I think that is close enough to that line that we'll consider it as part of the discovery, because that was my cutoff for it as well. Yeah. All right. TC, what's your first runner-up for 2016 discovery?
My first runner-up is, and I just lost my page.
Yeah.
My first runner up is excuse me. Welcome to the Dungeon.
That's
I was
a good
I was choking. I muted the microphone because I was choking and then came back. Yeah, so Welcome to the Dungeon, and it's because I mean it's not that old, but I guess it's technically a 2014 game. I didn't realize that. But Welcome to the Dungeon, and I love it because there are people out there that hate this game, that don't understand why it's any good, and I totally understand why you feel that way, but you need to play this game with someone who can teach it well, because you can't just learn it from the rules. I mean, there's like, it literally is like two rules in this game, but because of that, you have to understand like the mindset behind why you're actually doing what you're doing. Cause if you just play it and you play one round, you're just like, I don't get this game. I don't know why you would, you just, whoever passes last goes into the dungeon. What am I actually doing? I have no clue. And so like people don't know what they're doing. They don't strategize at all. And they just play it. And they're like, well, that was kind of dumb. But I feel like Welcome to the Dungeon is one of those like Japanese style games that kind of epitomizes the whole like what micro games are about. And it's about really just taking a very simple decision and making it the game, the entire game. So in this, you have you get to look at a card and you have that secret information. And now it's up to you to figure out how to use that secret information to your benefit or to your detriment. And that's why I like it a lot. I've played it with like two players. It still works, but I like playing it with at least three. And I think three is like the sweet spot, but you can play it with four too. Just it's one of those games that you kind of, I have now played a lot. So it's great to just explain it to people and the mindset behind it and watch, you know, people who are just not usually into games just become devious or try to make some sort of weird play and then get screwed themselves, right? So it's great to have to, when someone has to go into the dungeon and they know they're just going to fail because they already put all the bad cards in it, right? And you just know from looking at their face, they knew they did it. So playing this game over and over again is just great. My only downside and why it's not like my number one is because it just goes on a little too long. It outstays its welcome each time you play. But, and it has that player elimination element. But other than that, just very cool, very solid.
I think it's a great choice. I mean, every time I've played it, I've had a blast. And
yeah, people hate it though. People just don't understand this game. I'm telling you.
It's
just...
because it's not terribly structured. Like it's like so many weird things can happen in the game that are only dependent based upon because of what the people around you are doing. You know, and so some people just don't deal with those types of games well, you know, that doesn't have a tight-knit sort of structure, but yet still has a social element, it has a bluffing element, it has a guessing and a pressure luck element, it's got all those things together, and that just drives some people crazy.
Yeah.
I love it.
I can understand. I just think that a lot of people get a bad shake on this because they're just not paying attention, they don't know what's going on, and it's just kind of oh, whatever. I guess I pass. I guess I have to go into this dungeon. Oh, I lost. Or, oh, I won. Okay, that was fun, I guess. And you just, it's a tight game, and you have to understand the mindset behind what is good and what's bad. And you learn that after a few plays, like how far you, how deep you can go. And I think I love that it's got four characters in there, too. I think that adds a lot of variety. So,
agreed. I'd like to check out Welcome Back to the Dungeon.
Has anybody played the expansion yet? Yeah.
No, not yet. I've seen it a couple times at the store, but I just never have played it.
Yeah, I need to pick it up. So I've heard it adds a lot more to the game. So,
which, yeah,
I mean, all I need is good as it is. So I'm interested to see what it does.
All I need is more characters. I just like having different characters as you play. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good choice. Solid choice. I wholeheartedly approve of that. Okay, so.
So all my suggestions have been Euros so far.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
All right. That's because you play all the Euros the year they come out. Whatever.
Probably true.
Yeah, it is true. My next one, I couldn't find confirmation whether it was truly a 2015 release. It says it is in the BGG database, but I had not heard of it until New Year's Eve. And this is why we wait to do our lists until after New Year's, because there's always the holidays you play something that's unexpected. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and include it. I'm going to put a little asterisk as a thing that if for instance, Matt Wolf owns the copy. He brought it to New Year's Eve. And Matt's probably going to say, well, I think that was technically released in 2016. Anyway, if that's true, I'll show you what my asterisk, my alternate pick for this one is in a second. But Booty from Mayfair.
Booty.
You just cannot not say that while you're playing the game. But again, so Libertalia is obviously a pirate-themed game. Well, Booty is a pirate-themed game as well. And Booty has one of my favorite game mechanics, which it's done right sometimes, but it's hard to really put into a solid game that's not going to be overwhelmed with a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And that is a divvy mechanic. So in Booty, you're basically just different pirate factions, and you have these little islands that have spaces to put your little flags on, so you're trying to make a dominance in that particular island. But basically each round, depending on the number of players in the game, a set amount of cards are put out. One is always face down, so there's always an unknown card. And then from that, somebody basically bids on being the I don't remember the exact term, but the auctioneer. Basically they take command of the cards, and so they go, all right, well, depending on the turn order that has been set either from the previous round, usually, so on and so forth, you put together a set out of those cards that are put out in front of the table, and you put it on the table, and you say, okay, pirate number one, you're in the first place section. Now, every time you do that with the set of cards, you also have a set of the turn order markers, too. So you could say, like, I'm going to put, you know, a rum, a flag, and the face-down card, and plus position number two. And so you go, hey, you know, pirate number one, do you want that? And if they don't, and it passes down, so on and so forth, if everybody passes on it, then you're going to end up with it as the auctioneer. And then the next person in line who has not already been, not eliminated, but have not bid on something for that turn, will do it. So, and you just keep going through that for each subsequent rounds throughout the game. And there's several different ways to score. Of course, you're pressing your luck, but also was if you try to be the auctioneer, you want to try to make something that you might be okay ended up with, but it's going to be like, maybe you want to get somebody out of the way early that's trying to go for the same things you are. So you give them something really enticing so that they'll kind of grab that up and get out of your way. So then you can keep going and get even more cards out of it. It's just really fun. And like I said, unfortunately, I keep saying for a Mayfair game, it's actually not bad looking. I like the very stylized design choices they've made for the cards. Super easy to see on the table. It's easy to see what area everybody else has collected in front of them, so you can kind of ascertain what they're going for, what they might get, you know, snafu'd with. Tons of different variable options, including force cards, the strength cards, which enable you to take over portions of different islands. And even then, you're trying to get on those islands first because the three spots will fill up closer than two spots and one spots and so on and so forth. Excuse me. You also, of course, with those types of games, you have two hidden agenda cards. And so you're trying to, of course, accumulate some things throughout the game that you can score toward the end of the game on. It was awesome. I had a blast. Obviously, it's a game that's probably going to play better with more players. We had, I believe, 5 or 6. I can't recall exactly how many we had it out. But this is a great game, and I highly recommend it, especially like for people who like those types of mechanics. The divvy mechanic is always fascinating. It's a little bit maddening when it's your turn to be the auctioneer, I won't lie, because you're like, you got to try to figure out, like, get inside people's heads and figure out exactly what they're looking for versus giving up stuff that you would have. But I loved it. And so I'd highly recommend checking it out. Has anybody played Booty?
No. I'm going to allow your choice here because I was researching it while you were talking. And Tom Vassell did a preview of it in 2014. So therefore, it has to have a 2015 release.
Was his preview back in 2014, really?
His summer preview at Origins was 2014.
Okay. Well, going to allow it. I'm going to put it in as a 2015 release. It must have been, I don't know, it was a sleeper. That's all I know, but it's definitely deserves to be on the Discovery of the Year list for me. I'm limiting the type of or the games that I buy, but I'm definitely going to buy this one because I want to have a solid divvy game that can play with larger amounts of people. So
you want to have at least one booty in your collection.
At least one booty in my collection. That's right. I need more that has booty in the title. All right, so we have come back around now to our first officials, our biggest, our discovery of the year for 2016, starting with Jessica.
All right, my discovery of the year is a game from 2006 from Mir Grande Games, and that is Thern and Taxis.
And that is old school there.
This game, yeah. I haven't listed my top 10 games, but this is in the top 10. I love this game. I played it for the first time at RuthCon in July. Linus brought a copy, and it's, some people kind of describe it as being kind of like Ticket to Ride. It's almost like a step above Ticket to Ride. You're building routes and trying to build post offices, and you get points for placing down the houses. You also get points for building out longer routes and for also upgrading your carriage through this mechanic in the game. So it's like, yeah, I really have to be strategic about how you do it and making sure that you have cards, because every turn you have to place a card down. And if you don't have one that matches to your route, then you have to basically scrap your route and start from scratch. So you really have enough to make sure you at least have like a backup plan, something to place down. So you really have to be strategic about that. On Yukata, I always have a game of Thern and Taxis going. And there are some cool expansions to the game that I've played on Yukata that I'd like to play in person too. So they're really cool and interesting. I love, 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 love this game so much. And I don't even have a copy of it in real life, and I need one.
Too bad. Too bad, so sad.
Well, it was on my Christmas list for this past year, but nobody got it for me, so.
I'm terribly sorry. You might have to buy it yourself.
I will in 2018. But Discovery of the Year is Thern and Taxis.
What if it goes out of print forever and you can't find it anymore?
Shush.
Yeah, it ends up like Stone Age, and it's like $200 a copy.
What if you already had that resolution for 6 months and completed that resolution and now are doing it for another year?
Yeah.
Hey.
For no reason.
I have my reason.
Mm-hmm. No, if it was character building, that would be one thing. You've already shown that you have character. If it was about showing restraint, which would be a very Christian value, I would respect that, but you've already shown restraint for 6 months. My reasoning is you should allow yourself to enjoy the hobby that you enjoy the most. That, to me, is the most important thing about life. And I would never want to deprive myself of just that minor bit of enjoyment every now and then, opening up a box of something I know is going to be great and fun. Isn't that right, everybody, other than Jessica?
Yeah, that is totally right. Or in TC's usual parlance, it's when we're at a con and he goes, I really like to play that game, and I end up having to buy it. So
Chris.
It was so good. I can enjoy this hobby without purchasing new games. I still have plenty of games in shrink that haven't even opened up.
From my perspective, I would just like to put my two cents in. From my perspective, if everyone acted like Jessica, you would not have fantastic games like New Bedford and several other Dice Hate Me Games titles, like the reprinted Viva Jabbas that are coming out before too long, because then we wouldn't be able to make enough money to make them, and then the hobby would die and shrivel up, and we'd have to go and find another hobby.
And I'm 1% amongst all the millions of board gamers out there.
Yeah, you're just spreading the virus, though.
Using peer pressure.
Has anybody watched Twitter and seen the backlash I've gotten? So plenty of people are out there still buying games. And
yeah, but you know the most dangerous weapon in the world is an idea, Jessica. That's all it takes.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, I have my reasons. I can't be spending money this year.
All right, let's get back on track here. We won't talk about Jessica's debt. So
she's
got to take care of that house the same as I do. It drives me insane.
I guess that's true, but
I'm getting out from under the stupid thing.
Yeah,
You'll have 100 years to be practical while you're dead.
Until it's your time to come back around through the guffin. Anyway. All right, Daryl, what is your official discovery of the year for 2016?
Huh? You guys still talking?
I don't hear it.
All right. Here comes the controversy.
Uh-oh.
I'm bringing it.
Uh-oh.
My discovery for 2016 is Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition.
Oh, no.
No, I'm backing this up. Because I'm sick and tired of people saying, oh, Descent 3rd Edition is Game of the Year. And it's been out for like 14 effing years. I don't care. It's still Descent.
You know what?
If it was a different game, they'd change the title. In that case, Magic the Gathering should be Game of the Year every year because it's still going and still bringing more people to the hobby.
Yes,
so,
but Darryl,
I'm sorry. Mansions of Madness, 2nd Edition, my discovery of the year for 2016.
It should be your Game of the Year then because it was released in 2016.
My game of the year. It is my discovery of the year because Mansions of Madness has been out for lots of time.
Not this Mansions of Madness. And you know
it's still called Mansions of Madness. It's the same logo on everything. Nothing
not
changed.
Game, though.
Sorry, Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition.
Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu came out this year in 2016. Is it considered a separate game? Because it's got Pandemic on it. I mean, it's just
Pandemic.
What?
Pandemic Cthulhu was Pandemic in name only.
So?
We had this argument off air already.
Yeah.
We were ready. We're ready to get out the pitchforks and take Daryl on with this one.
No, I'm sorry. But if
these games are different.
We have all had the griping confession. We've all had the gripe fest when we see people say.
I would agree with you if it were like Puerto Rico 10th edition, 10th anniversary edition. It's the same game. It just has different stuff.
Exactly.
No, but like they bring out war games that are different editions, and everyone's like, oh, well, this edition's Game of the Year, and the game's been out for 20-something years. It's like, no, you can't say that. It's already been there. It's already gotten there.
But like Arkham Horror would be a great example, too. Arkham Horror, the original versus the new one, there is a total difference between those two games, even though they share the same name. Like, and I would say, like, the fact that there's no app in the first Mansions of Madness and that there was all those little weird things... You know, it's like I would never go back to the first edition of Mansions of Madness.
The app simply replaces the storykeeper or the storyteller, and that's it. That's all it does.
Yeah, but it also streamlines all the actions that you could take and all the other different.
Of course it does.
I'm not saying the app does. I'm saying the game itself is streamlined compared to the old version. I would never have played Mansions of Madness, the first edition, because it's just not my type of game. This one at least gives me some sort of entry point where I'm not going, okay, well, what's the exception to this rule, which is the exception to this? There was just a lot of that going on in the first edition. Hey, I'm just saying, no offense, I'm just saying.
All right, Daryl, if you want to stick with Mansions of Madness as your discovery of the year and you're going to get all the feedback and flack for it, you go right ahead. So
I'm sticking with it. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll put a little. Hold on. I'm writing it in the show notes now. Mansions of Madness with like three asterisks next to it for the three of us who disagree that is discovered the year. Okay. All right, TC. Why don't you give us your discovered the year? Because we'll argue with you about something later. But anyway, go ahead.
My discovery of the year is Great Western Trail. No. Technically, the designer was working on it last year. No, my discovery of the year is sadly we didn't have, like, the years previous. Usually something breaks out that I can go, oh man, yeah, I remember that thing, or like we play at PresCon or we play at some sort of thing and I can remember one specific that sticks out. And this year I don't think it really happened because we don't have a lot of crossover on our list. So yeah, I'm just gonna go with one that just I never got to play and everyone makes fun of me for never playing it, and that was Patchwork. So it's fantastic. I love the Patchwork. I bought it for people for Christmas this year because I loved it so much. And so I'm going with Patchwork, and yeah, it's not really a discovery to me feeling. It just feels like I discovered it and everyone else already knew about it.
Well, don't feel bad. I only played it this past year too, so I was not quite
enamored. That's so lame. What is your problem?
I was not quite so enamored with it. I like the system, but it's just, it's like,
oh, great.
But it's so short, and it's like, how do you ever get your points up and make a really cool, you know,
quilt? You gotta play it some more.
Yep. Yeah, you gotta play it a lot. I know. It's straight.
Filled up our thingy the first time. I don't understand. We must just be really good at strategy games.
Or you just had like the right order of them to begin with.
I like the first option.
Yeah, I played a bunch of games where both of us were in the negatives. But then I've also played games where some, you know, people had a lot really high points. So I think it really just depends.
Oh, I also forgot too. This year I bought like Rolling America and Quicks too. I'll put them on as the runner ups because I don't know why I didn't even say that because I hadn't played Quicks before this year.
Oh.
Quicks is really good too.
Yeah,
Rolling America and Quicks would then be honorable mentions, but they might even be on this list had I just remembered them because of that comment. But anyway, yeah. So I think this game is fantastic. I love it. So.
Well, it's done really well, and it's very popular, so I think it's a solid choice. I did not enjoy my first one. I was a little frustrated with, like, kind of how it played out, but I realized that, you know, I got to play it more, and it doesn't take that long to play. So mm-hmm. It's, like, you know, pretty, pretty straightforward. Now, some of this is re-implemented in Cottage Garden, right?
I guess.
A little bit.
And also a Feast for Odin.
Well,
yeah. Cottage Garden is... Seth Jaffe argued me to no end on Twitter because I was like, Cottage Garden is kind of like the sequel to Patchwork. But he's like, no, that's like saying, and then he just named two games that are totally different. It's got the exact same engine. It doesn't have the economy that Patchwork has in it. And honestly, I like Cottage Garden more because you're not digging out of the negative point hole the entire time. And there's more strategy of how you place your stuff because there's like... there's these garden bells and stuff in the garden that you don't want to cover because they give you more points if you finish your garden and keep them all open. So there's a few more things, and your garden's constantly changing. So it's not just like Patchwork where you just have the one quilt. So I played Cottage Garden 3-player, and I quite enjoyed it. I own Patchwork. I enjoy it, but Les and I both have the same issue that every single time. It's like, okay, who had the least crappy score? Like, there you go. I think Cottage Garden is kind of the nice version of Patchwork.
But Cottage Garden is a 2016 release, so
yes,
Patchwork still counts and is superior for the discovery of the year. So way to go, TC. Nice. Yeah,
it's also a superior game.
All right. So this is not an official rule of mine, but I tried to choose or highlight games that, well, that's not 100% true because Alien Frontiers was out of print when I named it Dice Hit Game of the Year for 2010. So the discovery of the year this year is a game that's been out of print for a long time, and I don't know why. And I've been hunting for a copy forever and ever and ever. And about a year ago, I tracked one down, and we managed to get it on the table at PressCon and a couple of times since then. And Jessica, you were involved in this game, and it is so much fun. It's Pony Express.
Yes! That game is awesome.
It's just a blast. And I knew it was going to be a blast because it's one that I've been hunting for forever.
And that's the racist game.
Yeah.
Well, it does have some slight racism toward Native Americans, yes. But it's because it's like, what, French or whatever? They are always that way.
French. French are always like that.
Yeah, exactly. So Antoine Bauza and Bruno Fiduti put this together, and it has Liar's Dice, Dexterity, you know, Luck, Pressure Luck, Racing. I mean, it's just... And the artwork and the board and everything in the game is just top-notch.
So cute.
Yeah. absolutely adorable and just a complete blast to play. I'm so glad that I was able to finally track down a copy. Unfortunately, it is one of those that's going to cost you if you're going to try to find it. Now, what I cannot understand is why this has not been reprinted, because it's just gorgeous. And the reviews for it are great too. And people who play it think that it's a lot of fun. I just don't get it as to why it's out of print. But anyway, I'm looking forward. I bring Pony Express with me everywhere just in case somebody wants to play it. I'll have it at PressCon again this year, so if anybody wants to try it out there. But it is definitely my discovery of the year. It did not disappoint my over 5-year search for it. And so there you go. Pony Express. Check it out. And pay no attention to the Indians in the game. We'll just not get into all that.
Just knock them over.
Just shoot them up. All right. So.
I'm still bitter at my loss of that game, by the way.
It was so close. Still good.
It's only about the experience.
That's right. You just got to move on. Well, real quick before we move on to our game of the year, is anybody will rattle off other than what TC's mentioned for any of like their list of runner-ups? Or not runner up, but honorable mentions.
I don't have any for discoveries.
I got a few I'll run through really quickly. Blood Rage, I'm sorry I was late to the party on that one. It was a late 2015 release, but it could technically be considered 2016. Anyway, that was fun. I like Blood Rage. Seven of Wonders Duel, I was late to the party on that one. That one was definitely a good runner up. Mombasa, I don't know which where you could consider that one as a release, because it was an Essen release, and then we just kind of found it at Unpub. In the wild.
I'll agree with you on Mombasa.
Yeah, Mombasa's really, really good. And Port Royal, which was super hot at Origins this year, but it was published, 3 years ago or something like that? Mm-hmm. And then Mission Red Planet, which I finally got.
Yeah, which I haven't played yet. I want to play the second edition.
Yeah, it's really
Speaking
good.
Speaking of second editions, apparently this second edition is much, much better than the first edition.
That's what I hear. I got the second edition. It was it's great. I got to play it this year. I had a blast with it, and it's one that I want to get on the table some more in 2017.
I don't know why. Like, my game group loves that game, but every time it's out, I just have, like, no desire to try it. But I feel like I need to, because everyone goes on about how great it is.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Anybody else with any honorable mentions they want to throw out? Everybody good?
Mm-hmm. For the year.
All right. Let's do this then. So we're going to go into the Dice Hate Me, or the State of Games Game of the Year. We're ending with the official Dice Hate Me Game of the Year. We'll have our second runner-up, first runner-ups, and then finally Game of the Year. And for this one, of course, it had to be in a game that was released in North American retail between January 1st and December 31st, 2016. Even though somebody's going to cheat, and we'll talk about that later. But we've already had one cheat in the discovery of the year, so we might as well have one in the game of the year.
And I might have a cheat, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll discuss it. But
okay.
All right, Jessica, go on. Go first. What's your second runner-up for your game of the year?
Okay, I had such a hard time picking my second runner-up. Partly it's due to, like, only having one play of specific games.
Yeah.
And then the one I did choose, though, is a game that's, like, really hard to find right now because it's sold out. But we played it at the Dice Hate Me holiday retreat. I love this game so much that I actually kind of made makeshift versions and have taught people how to play it here. And that's Insider from Oink Games.
Oh, yep, there you go. Terrell's clap.
That game is... Okay, it's shocking to me that a social game is actually on my list, because they're not really my favorite, but this one is so much fun. And I like it because it's... As opposed to Stupid Spyfall, this one's much more closed-ended. In this game, one person is the insider that knows the word that everybody's trying to guess, and then everyone is working together against the game master to try to guess what the word is by asking them questions. And so the insider can kind of turtle, but then if everyone's kind of not getting close to the answer, they can try to, you know, unsuspiciously kind of gear the questions and kind of, you know, direct you towards what the actual word is that you're trying to figure out. So so much fun. You can just use paper on this game and then pick a word yourself instead of using the deck of cards that comes with the game. And that's what I've done here since I can't get a copy because it's sold out. But love it so much. I could play. I mean, we played, I don't know how many times we played at Daryl's house, like 3 or 4 times, and I could have played it like 10 more times. So yeah. Much fun.
That well, it, that will be coming out, I believe. I don't know if it had a North American release. So that might be one issue while you're trying to find it. But Bezier Games has licensed it, and it will be coming out this year.
Great.
So it could be your game of the year next year.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's the same edition. It's just another game.
Yeah, it's just a second edition. No difference.
No. Come on, Bezier will change the name. It'll be Werewolf Insider, or the Inside Werewolf or something.
Inside the Werewolf.
Inside the Werewolf.
One Night Ultimate Insider?
Uh-huh.
Okay, awesome. All right, Daryl, so what is your second runner-up for Game of the Year?
Mine is probably not going to be much of a surprise to anybody. It is probably, as much as I complained about Splendor and it being overproduced and everyone hyped about the components, it is hands down the most beautiful game produced in 2016. And then what little we've played of it was incredibly addicting, and I can't wait to delve into it even more. And that is Mechs versus Minions. That game is just freaking amazing. I'm a huge stickler for pre-programmed moves, and it does it in a different and kind of unique way. And just the way that your bots take damage, the fact that it's a co-op, the fact that there's secret objectives that you're doing throughout the whole thing. It's just everything about it. It's like, wow, this is like everything I like in a game in this. And it's also really pretty. So, yeah. Mechs versus Minions.
It is far more fun than it ever has any business being.
I don't think any of us, when the three of us, Chris, TC, and I, when we sat down, none of us expected it to be as enjoyable as it really was. And it blew us all out of the water.
Yep, it's slick, and it is a great production, obviously, and we talked a bit about, you know, some of the not necessarily backlash, but what some people have been saying about Mechs versus Minions, and, like, people are going to be expecting such great production values and stuff out of games, but all of that aside, I mean, that's just people being dumb, because it's a fantastic game. It's great, you know, good on Riot Games for doing a great job of putting this out and doing it kind of under the radar. I knew it was coming, and all of a sudden they went, well, yeah, I want that game. A lot of fun. Just tons of fun to play. So I'll back you up on that one. It was definitely, well, we'll see if it made my list or not. But anyway, let's go on to TC. What is your second?
Well, I decided to switch some things up. I guess we'll wait on, like, sort of weird honorable mentions and stuff. Because I'd like...
Yeah, we got a few of those.
A few, and which I'll wait until, like, before we do the final game of the year and stuff. But, so I just switched up my list a little bit this time because I wanted to think about it, but I really haven't got a chance to delve into this game enough. So I'm going to give it my nod, and I'll go into the other ones that I didn't pick, but I'm going to pick Energy Empire.
Yes.
Wow.
For the third one.
Manhattan Project Energy Empire.
And I think most people would be surprised that, like a sort of branded off of the Manhattan Empire kind of project would be like so good, but I think hands down, at least from the time and a half that I've played it, which I, like I said, I want to delve into it more. Just like anything that we have on this list, it's like I didn't really get a chance to jump in, and I'm making a gut reaction on a lot of these games based on one or two plays, and Energy Empire is was something that I just took me by complete surprise, just kind of like Mechs versus Minions. I didn't put Mechs versus Minions on my top three, just as a spoiler, but I thought it was amazingly inspiring for a designer. Energy Empire just isn't. It is not Manhattan Project at all. It's like World War II game, like post World War II game. And that's what I mean. And it's all about just building up an energy empire, just building up your engine and doing one of three types of choices, and then like expanding upon those choices during the course of the game. And it is really good, really solid. And I did not expect it to be, and I have no clue why they decided to put Manhattan Project on it, but I like it way better than Manhattan Project, by the way.
Is it just because it's part of the world, like the art?
Yeah, and they use the same like workers. Oh, yeah. It has the mechanic where you put all your workers out and then you have to take a turn removing them.
Mm-hmm. So worker takement.
Yeah, worker takement turn. Which I don't think affects the game too much, but it just keeps a nice flow.
Yeah. And
I don't know. Really fun. Really good game.
Yeah, I've played it once, and that's the only reason. I actually don't think it would have been in my top three. It's definitely an honorable mention. But I'd want to play it some more, but I don't own it. Somebody else in the group has it, but it was really good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's complex enough. It's not overly complicated, and it's just really easy to play. Mm-hmm. So
It's one that's definitely on my list to try, because I knew it was weird. It didn't get buried behind it, but it was like Chain Reaction came out first. Mm-hmm. And the Chain Reaction is fine, but it's like all of a sudden there was another Manhattan Project game out.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the heck is the deal with all that? And then I saw like what it started to look like and the buzz where people were talking about it. So it definitely started to make my list, but I have not had a chance to play it yet. Maybe someone will have a copy of it at PressCon. That's usually when I get to catch up on some of these. So that would be awesome.
Yeah, I was on Twitter, and Daniel Newman actually put it as his number one game for last year.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people are praising it. It's really good. And I never even heard about this until someone brought it out at Game Day after getting their Kickstarter copy. I never heard about it on Kickstarter.
Yeah, it kind of just missed me as well. So, but I think I just thought it was the card game.
Right? Yeah, I think it was the same way.
I thought it was the card game.
Because they were so close together. Yep. Yeah, I think a lot of people might have missed it. But now, this is getting good buzz. They'll probably pick it up. All right. So, again, I have a lot of things on my honorable mentions list, but my third is going to be Star Trek Ascendancy. My second runner-up is going to be Star Trek Ascendancy. And I had a tough time with this slot because Star Wars Rebellion almost made that. Not to give away the rest of my list, but Star Wars Rebellion didn't make it. Sorry, folks. But Star Trek Ascendancy did, and it edged it out just by a teeny little bit. It also edged out another game we've already mentioned, Mechs vs. Minions. So I'm just a sucker for 4X. And also, I love the Star Trek universe. I mean, I like Star Wars as well, but I think that, I don't know, I feel like Gale Force 9 has done such a great job with all of their source material when they're using licensed properties to make it feel like a Star Trek game that can have, you know, these asymmetrical sides, but they can play like the factions actually play, or you would think they would play. And you can have different win conditions through Ascendancy or through, all-out battle and taking over home planets and stuff like that. So, you know, that might benefit the Klingons versus the Romans, going to be sneaky and do one thing or the other. And the Federation is usually going to be trying to get Ascension points or Ascendancy points. It's a lot of fun. And the way the whole universe is built out with all these it just looks Star Trek-y. It's like a weird Elkars interface with everything moving everywhere and all these little circles and the exploration portion of it's a lot of fun. I just think Gale Force 9 has really knocked this one out of the park because, well, also the production value is fantastic. Now, yes, is it a little weird because you have to have three people to play? Absolutely. However, with the expanded factions, you can bump that up and play with four or more. As they start to release more and more, it does take a while to play. I won't lie about that because it is a 4X game. It's going to be a lot of shifting alliances. And so some people aren't going to like that. But if you really like that type of a game, that's going to be streamlined enough that it feels very slick, very well produced, obviously, and definitely kind of a love letter to the Star Trek lore, I'd highly recommend this game. So that's my second runner up for Dice Hate Me Game of the Year 2016. Apparently none of you have played it. So.
No, I'm so sad. Yeah. I haven't gotten a chance to play it.
It is good, and hopefully we'll be able to play it all together. Maybe we can get a 3 or 4 player game going. Maybe even PressCon, we'll see. But it's just a lot of fun. I look forward to playing it more and more. It's one of those like Forbidden Stars and some of the others that I've chosen in previous years that have done a really good job of exploring the 4X universe. All right, so let's loop back around. Jessica, this is your first runner-up for Game of the Year.
Yes, my first runner-up was actually my number one until my number one actually took over, like recently, because I didn't know it actually came out this year. But my first runner-up is Terraforming Mars from Stronghold Games.
Well, there's a shocker.
love this game so much. So, like, some people don't care for the game, and some people really love this game, and I love it because it's so tactical. I love not having to have to plan too far ahead, because I just can't keep those strategies in play in my head. But Terraforming Mars, I love that almost every generation of the game, you almost have to adjust what you're doing because of the cards you got dealt or because of what other people are doing. I just love it so much. And it's actually a game I'm decent at, and it's just fun to play. And I hate teaching games, but I actually love teaching this one. And it's because I play it so much that I know it so well I can teach it. But this game is fun. I love the theme. I love how well the theme is dispersed throughout the game. People complain about the graphic design. That doesn't bother me, but I will never play this game again without overlays for the player boards, which I personally have got. But other than that, I love this game. So much fun. I could play it every game day. I could play it. Love it so much.
Yeah, your overlays that we played with were super nice. I mean, I want to get some myself. I mean, they're not cheap. But as much as you play Terraforming Mars, as much as you like playing Terraforming Mars, it was definitely a good investment for you.
Yeah. And now there are game trays, too, that people have been playing with. So if people like the game trays, the way that they're made, I think they're a little weird. I just like playing with, like, the actual player mats that came with the game. But
solid choice. I'm with you. I agree. Daryl, you still with us?
Yep.
Okay. TC had to step away for a second, but we'll go with Daryl. What is your first runner-up for Game of the Year?
I finally got the intro game out of the way, so I've done a demo and an intro game of this, and I've read up a bit on a Reddit sub-channel all about this game and all the possibilities there are, and I am so excited to dive even deeper into it, and that's Arkham Horror, the card game.
Solid choice.
It is so, so good. It should not be as good as it is. And the fact that, it's just because it's a card game. So to like, typically it's like, okay, well, I'm going to play it a few times. I know the probability, but you know, of this and that, but the fact that there's different ways to play it. So like there's the campaign mode, which is what I'm going to run, where your investigator starts off with zero level everything. And as they go on, they can upgrade certain items in their deck. Or there's a version where it's like you can just build your own deck to key out your investigator however you want. I mean, within the deck building requirements of that character. And it's you could just like try pimping everything out and just go whole hog on it. And it's just it's awesome. Like the Magic the Gathering player in me, the whole just obviously the horror slash Lovecraft the fan I've become over the last 2 years. Everything in it is just like, it's so good, and it touches on everything I really like. So, thank you, Jessica, for bringing it into my house.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
So happy I could bring such joy to someone.
It's really good, and I've actually had a lot of fun pimping it out. Like, I've pimped the game out before I even fully played it, and I was like, wait, why am I pimping this out and haven't sat down to, like, actually delve into it? And so, thankfully, we missed the podcast to do this yesterday. So I had a chance to sit down and just run through the intro game, and I'm just like, oh, this is so good. So, yeah, it's great. I highly recommend sleeving everything, and I think it was Burke Drew on Twitter that was showing me the actually, Ruth did it and then pointed it back to Burke. But anyway, you get the – it's like clear plastic to coin collectors use them on quarters to protect them. And so you get those for the punch board tokens that you put in the bag that you draw randomly, because otherwise the punch boards stick to each other, or you can fill like frayed edges and stuff. This way they're protected, so it's like sleeves for tokens. But it also, like, when you reach in, you just feel a bunch of big plastic bits. It feels so good to pull one out. Yeah,
I saw all that. We all were having that thread where you're talking about pimping things out with that, and I was like, what in the world? Have they gone off the deep end, but sounds cool.
Yeah, it is. And I've been using, as opposed to, well, I mean, I had extra coin protectors, so I cut out from my second set of Arkham Horror the card game, so I can play up to four players now, but I cut out the character cards to fit in there, and I've been back and forth debating, do I like these better, or do I like using the miniatures from Mansion of Madness better? So, yeah, for moving around.
Solid choice. Obviously, it's been very popular, and I can't wait to play Well, I mean, I've only had the short demo, and so I haven't played the full game yet.
Do you own it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had it. I bought it as soon as it came out. I just haven't had a chance to sit down. And I could solo it, and I should. You know, it's now that I got a clean table, I'll just sit down and solo it.
Yep, solo it. You'll get two characters to start off with. It'll tell you how to build their decks. And that's, like, setting you up for campaign mode because it's, like, level zero everything.
Awesome.
Just can't, run.
Can't wait. I'm shocked that I have not played it by now.
And there's two scenario decks available right now that you can get. So once you're done with these, there's two more that you can order from, I guess, Fantasy Flight does, like, a print on demand for these. And then there's a big expansion coming later this year.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right, TC, you back?
All right, Chris, what do you got?
Okay, then. I guess we'll roll over into mine, and we'll come back to TC in a minute. So my first runner-up for Game of the Year is, I know everybody's going to be shocked, Terraforming Mars.
What?
Exactly. Everybody just stopped listening. Yeah, for everything that Jessica said, it's just I love the kind of the story that comes out as you play the game, the interesting ways that you can play with the different factions, how tactical you have to be each round from round to round trying to figure out. But you, I mean, also a strategy in it as well. Because when you start to build an engine, you'll start to play a little bit toward that engine to make sure that you're maximizing what you're doing. I mean, the last game we played when we all played together during the holidays, I sucked wind so bad. I didn't spend enough time building up to get some of the tactical bonuses, the extra points, and then I didn't have enough tiles out, and I underestimated the amount of tile play that I needed to do to be competitive.
Yep.
But that just teaches you, just like, you know, there's just several different ways you can do things, and it's just a lot of fun. Now, like I said, some people are not going to like certain aspects of Terraforming Mars. There are people who, of course, like you said, have been griping about the graphic design and things like that. And I think it's totally fine. It feels very like NASA-like, spacey. You know, it's not overly obnoxious about it being spacey, but yet it's kind of utilitarian in what it does. I think it's totally fine. But I really enjoy Terraforming Mars. This is a game that I figure will be on a lot of people's Game of the Year lists, but definitely not shocking for me to have it in my second runner-up spot. First runner-up spot, rather. TC, are you back yet?
I am back.
Yay, he's back. All right, so we skipped over from my first runner-up of the year, so you can say your first runner-up of the year.
Okay, so my first runner-up was Great Western Trail.
Oh. Well, that's a good solid choice, too.
I will be buying this one very shortly. And the reason why is because then I can build up my Alexander Pfister collection. But on top of that, it's really, I think Daryl said it whenever we played it in the last podcast, it's just kind of a lot to take in at the very beginning. And then you start playing, you're like, oh, I only have these few options. Okay, I guess I'll do this thing. And then I guess I'll just do this thing. And then I guess I'll just do this thing. And so you start a flow through the game that is so easy to understand, even for people that are just starting out, that while you may forget little details, like, the game itself just runs really smoothly. So I'm glad that we got a chance to play with, like, all the little correct rules and all the little things already sussed out by the time we played it. But, like, at the same time, even if you would have played it like a little bit differently than what the game designer intended, I think the game just itself is just super fun to play. I love the idea, what the people are saying, rondel, but I think it's just a trail. It's just a trail of actions that you're creating. And so you go down the trail to Kansas City, yep, and trade in your cows. And
is it a great trail?
I mean, I don't know if I would call it great.
Okay.
It's kind of lame. It's a lame trail, but it is a great game. Even by the end, I don't think we filled in the whole trail. By the end, I had a combo going, so I made like a stop along the trail. So it wasn't really a trail. It was more like I took a plane.
Your combo at the end was just nuts. Yeah, you had invented air travel by that point. You were just looping the...
He had a turbo horse.
Yeah, he had something.
Yeah, but he didn't win, did he?
Yeah, he did.
He
creamed us. He didn't cream us, but...
No, he won He won Terraforming Mars.
No, I won
Terraforming Mars. I didn't win Terraforming Mars.
No, TC beat us at the very end of Great Western Trail with that combo because he ran the game out before we had time to really maximize. Because I was pretty up there, and I was dominating on the trains, but then because he was able to push Kansas City and ramp the game up to the end game so fast, I wasn't able to capitalize as much as I should.
He smoked us.
See here, I thought I won it.
No way.
What? Great Western Trail?
You were like third or fourth place.
How did I win Terraforming Mars then?
I won Terraforming Mars.
You were up there in Terraforming Mars. I was last place in Terraforming Mars.
Yeah, I was down too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were second place for Terraforming Mars.
Okay.
Remember Great Western Trail? I beat you by like 1 point. We were both like at the very end.
No. Well, it was still good. It was still good to see that you had said last time that like the train strategy is the strategy. And so I tried that a little bit, but then like just ended up getting every spot along every going to Kansas City and getting every spot, every city. And I thought that was kind of fun. I was able to hit every city, and it you do that, and you apparently do really well.
Well, and you dominated with the craftsman, so you're able to build, and you build that, you know, 1,000-point building or whatever. It allows you to jump all over the board, and it's like,
oh yeah, but like next time I want to play a different strategy. I liked what I did, but I want to try something else out.
Well, and I think that's kind of what, like, being able to play, you know, the first time I played Great Western Trail, I had fun, but it seemed like there was a dominant strategy. But then I knew that it couldn't be completely dominant because we had not played it 100% correctly. So when we played it, you know, over the holidays, I was like, yeah, I can see how now that won't be completely dominant. And so I was glad to see you trying something different for it to win. I thought it was just cool. It's a great game. I enjoy playing it a ton. I think it's definitely deserves to be on these lists for sure.
I was surprised I liked it as much as I did. So I really liked it. And I really liked it.
We will announce a few of our little also-rans here in a minute, but I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. So we'll jump into our full-on game of the year. Starting with Jessica, this is your official State of Games Jessica 2016 game of the year pick.
Yes, my game of the year, shockingly, is a bag builder, considering how frustrating they are for me.
Oh, I know what it's going to be.
It is automobiles. Vroom, vroom. Oh, my gosh. I love this game so much. This is also, like Thurn and Taxis, another game that I'm always have going on Yukata. And it is my most prized gift from Christmas this year that I got a copy of Automobiles. I played it for the first time, I think, online with Chris Mosley. And I don't know what it is. Even though it's a bag builder, for some reason, I think it's just because I like racing games. So it doesn't bother me that it's a bag builder and that I suck at it, because I very rarely win this game. But I don't know what it is. It's just whatever I draw the bag, trying to figure out how I can be most effective with it. Maybe not spend all of my cubes to move my car around the track, but save some money to buy cubes that might help me later. Making sure that I take care of my wear and get it out of my bag. I don't know. I love this game. I just think it's so much fun. And that's it. Game of the year. Automobiles.
I have fun with automobiles as well. I think it's, we actually mentioned our last Geek All-Stars, some of the games that kind of surprised us of 2016. And automobiles was one of those because I didn't know what to expect. But it's a lot of fun with the bag building. For some reason, I was either doing really well in a game or I was just blowing things up left and right and self-destructing. And automobiles, when we played, it was one time I was doing that. I was too dependent. I don't know if I was too dependent, but I was letting you two be too dependent on your hybrid engines, and I was burning too much gas, and I ran out. So,
yeah, I was driving my NASCAR Prius.
I think it was a Prius. Yeah.
I did, however, you know, it was like there was one frustrating part about automobiles, which ended up being not as frustrating as I thought. Like during the game, there's sometimes where it has the Dominion problem where you'll draw a bunch of cubes and you'll be like, well, crap, these are all bad.
Yeah.
I can't really do anything on my turn, right? Even if you're in a good spot to race, you're just still like, well, I could move one space or I could just sit here. But it kind of throws you a bone when you just sit there. You get like, I forget what the bonus is. What happens when you don't move? You don't get anywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't get anywhere, which usually happens no matter what if you move, right? And then on top of not getting anywhere, a lot of times if you have a really bad turn, you'll get rid of wear. And then It had these, which I liked, but maybe it was even too powerful. But it had a catch-up mechanic. So like, if you did have some bad turns, through no real fault of your own, you had these like, at least in the base game, you had like these green cubes. They were green, and
yeah,
it would allow the person in last place to take, to get to move a few extra spaces. And I remember one turn, I just, you know, I'd had like a turn or two where I just really couldn't do much. And then I got one of those along with, and I think I bought it on one of those bad turns. I bought one of those cubes and just used that and was able to just go the whole way around the track one time. Like I did one entire lap in a turn and now was in the lead, right? So it was, you never know exactly where you are or if someone could just eke out that victory, which I think is good for a racing game.
And this one actually wasn't even on my radar for Game of the Year. It was going to be my Discovery of the Year because I had no idea it actually just came out this year. But in December is when I found out it actually came out this in 2016. So it just knocked Terraforming Mars right out of that number one spot because I love automobiles so much.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. I think it's a solid choice. All right, Daryl, what kind of ridiculousness are you going to put for your Game of the Year 2016?
The 1984 version of Arkham Horror.
Arkham Horror, yeah, there you go. That could have been Discovery of the Year for sure.
I know.
Do you?
Yep.
Okay. the only issue that this game might have is it's not available in the United States yet.
What?
Well, that's an issue.
Yeah.
Again, we're at the asterisk next to your choice.
I think it's fair, though, because it's an Essen thing, right?
Yep.
But I thought the rule was that it had to be in wide release in the States.
North American release in 2000.
North American, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you could get it.
It's fine. We're going to have to
really want it.
TC anyway. So we'll
fine, just throw another asterisk on my stuff. I don't care.
I don't care either, Daryl.
Let's be perfectly honest. The only persons the only opinion that matters on this is Chris's, because it's the only one that goes forward as the official State of the Game / Dice Ate Me Game of the Year.
The State of Game, so the Dice Ate Me Game of the Year will be separate, so it's fine. Go ahead.
All right. Well, before I begin, I do want to say, hey, Jess, if Automobiles is online, I'd love for you to jump on Skype sometime and teach me in Let's Play Online, because I'm very interested, and I'm upset we didn't get to play it when you were here.
All right, awesome.
With that said, I'm sticking with racing, and my game of the year is Flamrouge. I have played it since I've gotten it, I think, 12 times now.
Whoa.
And it's awesome. It's a bicycle racing game. Flamrouge means the red flag, which is what signifies the last leg of the Tour de France race. And there's multiple tracks you could set up from with these punchboard tracks and build it as short or as long as you want, as difficult or as easy as you want. But it is just a simple deck thinning game. And you each start with a deck, you'll get exhaustion, but every single time you play a movement card, you remove that movement card from the game, so your biker has less and less movement options, but as you're getting exhaustion, it's actually adding in very, very slow movement. And you kind of have to mitigate uphill and downhill and slipstreaming behind other players. And I thoroughly enjoy it. And the more I play it, the more depth I see into how simple the game is, but how much strategy there is on managing the track versus managing your actual decks and your racers. So, Flamrouge, I will play this anytime anyone wants. I really can't believe I'm saying a racing game is my game of the year, but it really is. It's when I played it at BGG, it blew me out of the water, and I was like, maybe it was just a one-time thing. So then I end up buying it for myself, and then I'm like playing it more. I'm like, no, this game was just really, really good. And I was scared when I played it with Chris and TC because they were really quiet, and I was like, oh crap, here we go, we're doing another Alhambra thing.
I was just sitting there sad because no one had bought it for me for Christmas, even though I wanted it.
I thought it would be like an Alhambra thing, like halfway through they're going to be like, I can't believe you like this game. But no, it was, I don't know, I really liked it.
Real, nothing's as bad as Alhambra.
it wasn't like Quartz either.
Oh, come on now. Quartz was fun.
It's
my game of the year, dude. You're gonna take it away from me?
What? Quartz.
And it is wide release. You can buy it anywhere you have internet access.
Okay, sure.
Yep, see? It's true.
All right. We'll allow it. We'll allow it. It's fine. I'll allow it because only I saw it on every freaking table everywhere I went. Yeah, everybody had it, so it wasn't necessarily that hard to find. So. Okay, well, here comes another asterisk. TC, what is your game of the year?
My game of the year is Fast and Fatagan.
Fast and Fatagan. Racing games, man. Racing games.
No, it is not that game. It is Santorini, a game released at the end of 2016.
Not released, only delivered to Kickstarter backers.
I can't buy it yet, and I want it very badly.
TC, man, I'm good. The only reason I'm gonna allow this is because it's TC. Because like this game is like, it's TC's dream. Like somebody designed it.
Yeah, it's like somebody just went, oh, hey, you know what, TC? What would you really want? and I'd go, oh, well, I mean, there's this game I've been waiting for 10 years. Okay, I'll make it, but I will just ridiculously up the production value of it so that you can't possibly, that people everywhere around you always want to play it so that you'll never have to worry. Okay, TC? Great. Okay. So Santorini is like a gorgeous game. It's an abstract game. It embraces the abstract game part. With the exception that it really wants to also kind of, and I don't want to downplay it. It's not like they're like trying to be Days of Wonder, but it looks like a Days of Wonder production, and all of the awesome, gorgeous components and everything that goes along with that. But Roxley Games just went above and beyond anyone's expectations for this game. And made just a fantastic looking game. It's bright, it's colorful. It's got a 3D board that you put together each time that has like a floating island. And then Santorini, all the pieces are white with those distinctive blue caps of the Greek resort town Santorini, right? That they've never really changed because it just looks fantastic. And I've now played the game. Let's see. 16 or 18 times, 20 times, maybe that. And I only got it like right before Christmas, like the week before Christmas. So played it a lot since then, which I think most everybody's going to. It's a super addictive, I don't know, 20-minute game, something like that.
It's a blast.
Yeah, it's really fun. I think it's definitely one of those that like finally will get people to go, oh yeah, maybe I'll play one of these other abstract games that you have because this one's good too. So
I'm amazed. I'm amazed that like, you know, I'm fine with playing an abstract, but I'm definitely not an abstract fiend like you are. But a game like this that is just super solid and easy to play, but with such great production value on it, I mean, it's just going to open doors for all kinds of other types of games.
Yeah, it just goes to show that you can take any game, as long as it's good, and you know, make it accessible to people. And so this is just—it's a very—I mean, there's not even a page of rules; it's maybe half a page of rules for the base game. And that base game you could play over and over again; it would still be fun. But they even include these matchups that you could have during the game, where somebody just picks out two gods with special abilities, and you go, "Okay, you play as that god; I'll play as this god." And from what I've been reading up, because I thought, "Oh, this god, this is going to be way overpowered compared to this god. Like, why would you ever play that matchup?" Well, people have started like delving into them, and like they're like, "Oh yeah, well I always even you think that matchup's going to go a certain way, and you're like, but yeah, that guy, it's really hard for the other guy to win." You know, like wait, he just. Yeah, so I don't know. There's just really asymmetrical special abilities that give you a different new way to win each time. And it changes up the game so drastically. And I think it's because there's really only two or three rules to the game. And after you get past that point, right, like then you're adding in two more rules. So it's pretty much 50%, almost 50% extra rules.
Seriously.
To play with the gods, right? So it changes up the game so drastically, and each of those combinations you could play over and over again, because I think me and Chris just played I thought that was interesting, Minotaur and, can't even remember what the other person was.
What was his name?
He could build twice.
The Builder, yeah.
Yeah, so he could build twice, so it's just like...
Is that Hephaestus?
Hephaestus, yeah. And, man, yeah. That was just a completely different type of game. I was trying to wall myself in so that I wouldn't get pushed around, and he is just
able to like push just not even use his ability and win. Just stay off to the side and let me do whatever I was gonna do. And yeah, I've just been playing this game over and over again. I don't think I'll ever get sick of it. There's even a little Golden Fleece expansion in that box from my Kickstarter. I got the cool cover for the game, so I have the cool abstract cover, which you can't get in stores, I guess. So sorry, everybody.
Can't get Santorini in stores yet.
But anyway. So I would say my game of the year is Santorini with the cool cover. So
that's a super asterisk.
Hey, yeah, guys. So guys, my birthday is the month before it comes out. You know what I want for my birthday? Santorini. I want TC's copy.
All right. I'll get you another copy of Flamme Rouge. And then...
you can give it to me.
Deal. Actually, I got your Z Roadsters here. I still need to send you.
All right. I am ready to go. I'm ready to roadster.
All right. Yeah. To move things along.
Yep.
I know what Chris's game of the year is.
You do?
I know exactly what it is. You gave it away yesterday.
I did?
Yeah, you gave it away.
How? How did I give it away?
Twitter
comment?
What?
Twitter comment?
No. By not showing up to the initial recording yesterday, you gave it away.
Okay. And what is that then, Daryl?
Clearly yesterday you were hibernating, so your game of the year must be Bear Valley.
Bear Valley. Yep, absolutely. A masterpiece from Carl Chittick.
Yep. It just boom. You were playing it. You were involved.
You totally guessed it.
Was there a second edition of any Kinesia game that came out this year? Maybe Lost City.
Raw Squared.
Well, it's not 2.0. It's not available retail yet, but I did kickstart the new Medici, so there's that.
Yep. Okay.
So we'll talk about that in 2017. But no, everybody, come on, you know what my game of the year is. It's pretty self-explanatory at this point. Is anybody gonna take a guess?
Oh, I know.
I got the publisher.
Hangten.
Hangten. Yeah,
oh,
far
yeah.
out. That's right. Tavarua.
Finally, someone says something about Tavarua. Jeez. I thought it was great.
That is my official, that's the official Dice Hate Me game of the year for 2016, Tavarua, and it is fantastic, and it is completely came out of nowhere. I love those types of games that just blow me away, like that. I didn't know what to expect, and I had seen inklings of it, and but the theme is cool. It's a beautiful production. Again, it's a unique theme because it's surfing and it works. It plays like you feel like you're trying to keep a balance on a board as you're riding a wave in. And of course you're competing against other people to get combined scores. And it's unique. It's fun, beautiful production. Really well done game. And I love it. I think it's one of those games that I want more people to know about. And by making it the Dice Hate Me game of the year, I'm hoping that more people pick up this game and have a lot of fun with it.
And it's actually one of those games that it plays better when you play the rules correctly.
It does. Amazing.
Yeah. So
it plays harder.
Right.
Which to me is better.
It's also a game. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask if you read the rule book.
I did. The rule book's a little odd.
Yes, because Josh Mills gave it to me and was like, learn the rules and teach me my game. And at RuthCon. And I had to sit there for like forever reading them. And then I pulled the components out, was trying to teach Eric Booth. And I was like, maybe we just need to play and just go through, because I found it really hard to actually learn from the rules. There was just so much. It seemed like the way more.
Well, there were some redundancies in the rule book and the way it was laid out. Like they'd present something in one section and then they'd go over it in more detail in a later section. So the rule book could have been better. I will say that the production of the game and the actual play of the game is really, really good.
Yeah.
If you do get the game or do that, you could look at a couple of how to plays online or reviews that show you how to play. Because once you know the core mechanics of it, then you can go back and look for clarifications in the rule book itself. But you're right. I would say if there's one drawback to the game itself, it would probably be how the rules are presented. But once you got the rules down.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's a nice flow and.
Yeah, super easy. Again, super easy to play. The good flow to it. There have been a couple people I've talked to that haven't cared for it for whatever reason or another. I think it's just they just didn't quite feel comfortable with the game, with the card play and whatnot. But it's just when you ride, when you make a perfect hit wave perfect, and you're like just doing aerials and all kinds of stuff, and get all the way to the beach and get all these bonuses. It's like it feels so good to get that huge, nice score, that chunky score. But I also like that you have to combine your scores and balance how good you are on both types of boards in order to be the overall winner.
I think it's one of those games that a lot of people are going to miss out on because they play it. We play a lot of games once.
Yeah.
And I think Tavarua definitely gets better. Well, I mean, I liked it the first time, but like it gets better the second time because it has this really cool pace to it. It's like just perfect, right? You can be the Euro game player in this game. You can go to the beach and you can spend your things to get cards. You can get these cool cards that do things and you can jump on a wave and you could ride it all the way in. And you could have like, you could play all your cards in the perfect way to make sure that everything gets you a huge score. And then everyone else has already done two things by that point and they score more points than you, right? Like, so you have to balance the risk versus the absolute guarantee.
Yeah.
And that to me is like what makes it for an excellent unsolvable puzzle. And that's what I like about games, right? So just, am I going to take that? Like, I need to take the perfect wave, but am I willing to risk waiting two turns to go get that perfect wave? And then if I ride it all the way in and don't just like bail before, I could bail beforehand and lose the 2 points, but like I need to get back out there and get another wave because I got to do longboard and shortboard and I got to score on both sides as best I can, because if I don't win at least one side, I can't win. And if I don't get a good score on one side, then winning on one side is pointless. So for anybody out there that scored really well on both sides, I think you may have missed a rule.
I would agree. I would agree with fast. That.
Like, I heard someone say, oh, well, have you found out that, like, the person that scores the most point on one side ends up scoring the most on the other? I'm like, how?
Yeah, how? How is that possible?
There's just not enough time.
No, exactly.
So like, it'd have to be, like, a perfect storm for that to happen.
Yeah, and it's possible that could happen. And the more you play the game, the better you're going to be at assessing the risk. But there's still a risk.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. It's just a ton of fun. It's a great balance of both luck and tactical card play and risk assessment. And just, again, all in a nice little package that's fairly inexpensive, looks beautiful on the shelf and on the table. So Tavarua, 100% Dice Hate Me Game of the Year for 2016. Awesome.
I have to mention that game has that little conveyor belt thing that's really cool, where the waves actually move into the shore. That's so cool thematically. Yeah. And it's such a little thing, but my favorite part of that game is how you have to lay the little meeple on the surfboard as it's going out and then stand it up on the surfboard when you're catching the wave. I just think that's so thematic and funny and cute.
It's adorable. Absolutely.
I hate that the bottom of the surfboard looks better than the top. So I can't show off the bottom unless I crash.
Well, that is a legitimate concern, TC. you should write
polished by the water.
I want little invisible stands so that you can like angle your people upward. Can we get little stands so like as you're riding the wave it looks like you're riding the wave?
Well,
so
why you don't see the you bottom. Why don't you tweet at Far Off Games and tell them all your concerns? Don't do it version. Yet don't
yeah, do it. Where's the deluxe version?
Yeah, the deluxe version, right? Yeah, totally should be. You know, right? I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we move on to the backside of the podcast, we just want to run through really quickly honorable mentions for our games of the year, because obviously there were still a lot of good quality ones out there. Jessica, do you have some you wanted to rattle off? Or?
Yes. Well, I already mentioned Manhattan Project Energy Empire. I want to get more plays of it in, but I only got that one play in. Creo from Cool Mini or Not, or CMON now. That cooperative game where you're trying to create these planets. It's so much, and it's hidden. Nobody else can see your cards, and so they have to kind of guess how you're going to play your cards. I loved that game a lot. And also Council of Blackthorn, that's themed around the King's Council, kind of a Game of Thrones, where you're trying to just get the most influence amongst different factions, but also throwing treason points amongst other people. So much fun. Silly. But that surprised me, and that was a Gen Con purchase that I'm really proud that I got. So And Cards of Burgundy, and I can't believe it fell, didn't make my list, but Insider took over the number three spot, and Clank, actually. It was a choice between Insider, Cards of Burgundy, and Clank, but Clank I've also only played once, so.
I don't know why it's not called Cards of Burgundy. It really should be.
It totally should be.
Plus, that was on the verge. I just couldn't pick which ones, because I've played that one a few times, and I really like it. I should buy that, too, again.
It's super, super solid. Daryl, you got anyone you throw out?
Scythe.
Okay.
Yeah. I got a part of a game in at WashingtonCon. I finally got a full game in a little bit ago, and I really like it. It's kind of a surprise for me. I know it had much hype because of the size of the game, and obviously the Kickstarter campaign was huge. But it's one of those games that looks drier than it really is, and when you get into it and kind of pick up the kind of the way it goes, like it's kind of like the Great Western Trail, as in the explanation is a lot harder to get through than the actual mechanics of the gameplay. So once you pick up to it, I don't know, I really, really liked it. The only reason why I didn't make any of the Game of the Year stuff is probably because the one full game I've played, the ending was a little abrupt, but I've heard there's an expansion coming out that kind of addresses that, so I'm going to hold off and see how that goes.
All right. Yep, and that's it. Just I have not played it. That's a huge, like, my friend Steve owns it. I have another person that owns it, and we just have not gotten it to the table. So I can't. That is my one wild card. I can't tell.
Yep.
And I'll say that it's a solid pick for honorable mention. It does a lot of cool things with it. I do believe and agree that the end can be kind of abrupt. It can also be, if you ignore what your faction's, like, you know, special ability is, you can kind of get a little drowned out and lost. And, you know, it has its pros and cons to it. Is it way overproduced? Yes, but, you know, so what? I mean, it's gorgeous. You know, Mexico vs. Minions is overproduced too. So, you know, it's the same type of deal. But I think that's good. TC, what about you?
I just had two I wanted to highlight.
Okay.
Like, not necessarily that thing. I mean, because it was like Cards of Burgundy. That was another one I was thinking of. Like, Luck and Logic, a Japanese card game that I really like. A Feast for Odin. Like, all these games. Oh, and even New Bedford and Xenon Profiteer. Those two games came out this last year.
Oh, by the way, just to let everybody know.
Although Xenon Profiteer is a little bit of an asterisk because it's the end of 2015. But it's technically 2016.
And also, to be obvious, that on this podcast, we all of the Dice Hate Me games and Greater the Games projects were disallowed. We couldn't, they can't be part of the awards. But anyway,
I guess we could have done it, but
yeah, we could have. We put asterisks on everything else, but you know.
But Xenon Profiteer is really my game of the year, but that's okay. like Feast of Odin, all these other cool games that I just got to play, awesome games, even Carmica. It is a neat little game. But I was going to say my weird award for the year, like the weirdest kind of game I played, was Healthy Heart Hospital. It was weirdly good.
Is that a solo game?
It can be. Okay. I mean, it's a co-op. It's a co-op.
Okay. So, 'cause I've heard Derek Davis talk about it.
Yeah. It's the reason why I say it's weird is because it's set up like a General Hospital soap opera setup, right? You have like you have the heartthrob. Like, there's legitimately, I played as Dr. Wang or something, Wong, and it was Bruce Lee. Like, it wasn't like, oh, this is maybe Bruce Lee. It's like, this is Bruce Lee dressed up as a doctor, right? Like, it was awesome, and the art in it is awesome. Like, all the characters look like from the 70s, like some sort of soap opera like promotion kind of thing. Just great art for all the cards and everything. And then the board is so dry looking. It's so at odds with the cards. And then, like, there's these little tombstones. When people die, you lay out these tombstones in a row. I'm like, what is going on in this game? And then, like, you have, like, it's just this weird mechanic where new patients come in and they get worse as they sit in the waiting room. And then you're putting them into different offices. And you can treat them in the waiting room if they're at a certain level, but they get worse. And then you're putting them into operating rooms and operating on them. And they've got little EKG markers on it that move up and down. I mean, this game is weird. Like, I guess, like, super thematic, but weird too, because also that, like, that soap opera thing's coming in. Like, oh God, like, there's, like, when the patients come in, it's like, oh no, another crisis. Like, they explain what happens, right? And it just feels like a soap opera, a new soap opera episode, while all these terrible things are happening. But so it's just like, I don't know. It bowled me over as one of the weirdest games I've played, for sure. And it's wildly, it's good and also weird, like bad. Like, it's, you could win by a lot or lose by a lot. It seems like very swingy. But I guess that helps for the co-op factor. And then the other one was the most ambitious, ridiculous game of the year. I don't think it succeeded in any of those things, but I think it was just crazy. And that was the Grimslingers game. I still remember Grimslingers.
Yeah, that game is ridiculous, but it was still fun. We had a great time playing it. And it's
I love the world building and everything about it, but man, do I just not really like the game itself. I just love everything surrounding it. I think it's just an awesome idea and great art and such a fantastic like world and story that they wrote for the game. And then you play the game, and it's like sort of rock, paper, scissors, but magic if they had a baby, but then got all the cool things from magic, like no special abilities. And then there was a campaign thing added to it so that you gained more stuff sometimes. And it's like, so weirdly, again, it's so weirdly ambitious and it's so ridiculously over the top. And all these cards are amazing. And then the game is just like, hoping for Grimslingers 2.0 is the thing I'm looking forward to the most. I want a complete overhaul of that base system just to make it so that it is fantastic, because it deserves more space to play around in such a crazy, awesome world.
Yeah, I'd play it. I'd try it out again. I love the world.
So again, most ambitious, ridiculous, but also like probably the most memorable.
Yeah.
Just for how ridiculous
I thought it was a lot of fun. Really quickly, I'll run down mine. A lot of these have already been mentioned. Mechs versus Minions, obviously. Great Western Trail almost made the list for me. Star Wars Rebellion. Again, these are all like ones I could have put in my third slot here. Automobiles was on there. Castles of Burgundy. I thought Ice Cool was great for a little dexterity game. It's cute, but also...
I think, don't like it anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Oh, well.
I don't have enough finesse. I've never seen a good
kids are like prodigies at that game.
They are. My cousin was so good. I mean, it's just, I gave it to him for Christmas and it was a blast. Suspicion, I'm going to put on the list as well, because it is better than it has any right to be as well, and the production quality for the cost versus, you know, you can only buy at Target. It's just one of those games that definitely lived up beyond, and nobody was really hyping it, and I just saw it and it's like, it's really solid. Mansions of Madness, even though Daryl thinks it's a discovery. Shadow Star Corsairs, which is another 4X game that again is much better than it has any right to be. Totally shocked me as how much fun that game was. And then finally, Beasts of Balance, I wanted to mention.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, because just different.
I just realized there's one more that I need to add on my honorable mention.
What's that?
Just because no one else has mentioned it, and I feel like it definitely needs to be mentioned, and that's The Networks.
Oh, I totally missed that. That was on my honorable mention, too. You're right. Absolutely. Yep. The Networks.
Yeah. Again, another one I did not get to.
Oh, that's a shame. It's just...
I played the prototype, but that was a prototype, and apparently it's been updated and refined since then. So
it is. It's solid, and the humor behind it, just super easy to play. A lot of fun. Well, that about wraps us up for now. We're going to move on to the backside of the podcast. But before we do move on, I'd like to thank all of you out there for listening and supporting the podcast throughout 2016. We hope to keep improving, of course, in 2016. Anything you'd like to hear, obviously, you can get in touch with us and know about podcast topics. Whether you agree with our list here and have your own choices, of course, you're going to. Let us know what those are all about. And just remember that we can't do this podcast without you. So keep in touch. Talk to us on Twitter. Send us email at thestateofgames@gmail.com. And of course, we'll be back with great stuff in 2017.
And actually, before we completely cut away to the back end, a few people have pretty much pegged me to be what do the kids or the family games like.
Oh, yeah.
When we come to the podcast. And so I did a supplemental going by my son Ethan and asking him. So I got three games for best family game for 2016.
Oh.
So, in his order, second runner up is Ticket to Ride: My First Journey.
Solid, right?
yet he likes it, but he likes regular Ticket to Ride better because it is bigger. I think it's because it's a bigger board and all that stuff, so he just likes the full set. Because you could pretty much play My First Journey with regular Ticket to Ride. So Ticket to Ride, My First Journey. The next one up is My First Stone Age, which actually is quite a bit of fun. It's rolling die, picking up kind of a memory aspect of picking up tokens to try to build the huts, which will to gather resources to build huts. So all it is kind of doing the hut building mechanic in Stone Age, but it's really huge, chunky pieces of resources like clay pots and stuff like that. It's fun, and I enjoy playing it with him, and he really likes it. His and I 2016 Family Game of the Year, Chris already labeled it in his honorable mention, is Ice Cool. He wants to play that game nonstop. So I'm pretty sure he's going to have to get padding for his finger as much as he flicks the pins. So there you go.
Well, that's a nice addition.
Take that for however you want, yeah.
Well, just, all I know is it sounds like I would absolutely dominate at My First Stone Age, because that's my...
Yeah,
that's what I love. I love my hut building.
It's cool. It's really cool, actually. It's fun.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad we got a little extra. Daryl, if you want to add those into the show notes here so I can put them in the notes for DiceHateMe.com. Of course, I'll have links to these things on the show notes on DiceHateMe.com. Let's move on to the backside of the podcast and wrap this up before we move on into 2017 proper and other things throughout the year. Obviously, we'd be remiss if we weren't mentioning Kickstarters now. Obviously, there's not a ton going on Kickstarter because the beginning of the year is usually very slow on Kickstarter, but there were about three things I wanted to mention, and some of you may have comments on that or may have something you want to add on to yourself. But so Patrick Nickel is back on Kickstarter with two games. So he's been on a hiatus. We can't speak to all the details behind it, but he had gotten on with Geek Chic, and some things had happened behind the scenes. He's also had some rough goes of it personally, and so he explains a lot of that both in the main video of this Kickstarter campaign as well as a personal video that he posted. So if you want to go check out that story, you can back one or two of the games, or you can just donate whatever you'd like. But basically, he's said this is kind of the way to save Crash Games, to get these two games out and to allow Crash Games to continue. So go and check it out. If you feel like you'd like to help Patrick out, if you'd like to help out Crash Games, please do so. It's interesting. He set his funding goal at $100 for this, but later in one of the comments, or at least the descriptions below, said he'd like to get at least $60,000 for this one. So, I mean, I don't remember the last time I checked, it was like coming up around $18,000, $19,000, something like that. But go and check it out. Check out his videos. And it's good to see Patrick back after being on hiatus for a while. I just had an update to the next one that I'd like to talk about. Kingdom Death Monster made $12 million.
That's
insane. So that happened.
Yeah. Is it done?
Yeah, it's done.
Ah, darn it. I missed out.
Well, it was funny the other day because, like, there was people who were talking about it at the last minute, like, oh, should I back this? Should I back this? And I just can't. I mean, I looked at it, and it was only, I don't know how much time was left, and it was at 10, and it must have made $2 million in, like, 2 hours. It was just...
And to plug some other thing, it's like, I've watched Shut Up and Sit Down Show for years now, just, like, their reviews and everything, and... finally, someone did, like, a Kingdom Death Monster review that, like, literally makes sense to me as a gamer, right? So I'll just put a shout out there for Shut Up and Sit Down for actually doing a reasonable review of Kingdom Death Monster and the monster that it actually is. It's just it, and they go through it, but like I said, it's got all the tropes of like those old games that you know and love, where you just kind of you do something and you see if it works out. And if it doesn't work out, crazy things happen, right? Like, and then you watch that crazy thing happen and the next crazy thing happens and you have some sort of control over it, but not all the time. And that's what I love. That's an honest, good review of the game, right? Which I just haven't seen. I think people just either they, I think most people just get so overwhelmed by the beast that it is that they can't even give it a reasonable, like, look at. They can't even look at it from a reasonable point of view. So, yeah, kudos to them for a good review.
Yeah, I mean, well,
they still like the game. They still like the game, but like, tempered with some like actual criticism.
Right, and that's good. And I'd like to watch it because, like, I mean, all I see is the.
I mean, it's a long review too because they have so much to cover.
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on with Kingdom Death Monster, and people who love Kingdom Death Monster love it.
Yeah.
But if you're in it for the experience of games, I mean, that's just the experience. But like, if you don't like, but if you're in it for like the actual like manipulating a lever and seeing what happens, it's not necessarily Kingdom Death Monster that makes that happen.
Right.
The game manipulates the levers. You kind of just experience what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you missed it, you missed it. More than likely, anybody who's interested in Kingdom Death Monster and listening to the podcast probably didn't miss it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that $12 million. Whew. It's crazy campaign. Up next on my list is our friend Jason Tagmeyer is back with three Button Shy games choices for the beginning of the year. Avignon Pilgrimage, Turbo Drift, and Find Your Seats. And I talked to John Dubois at GrandCon and saw his Avignon there, and I didn't know anything about Turbo Drift or Find Your Seats. Turbo Drift looks right up my alley. So it's a racing game set in the Japanese mountain passes of the late 1970s. I mean, that's, if it wasn't Japanese, it would be like, hey, there's a Dice Hate Me game. It'd be awesome. Huh. But Button Shy games are cool because they come in, of course, a little Button Shy official wallet, game wallet. So go check those out. There seems to be something for everyone here. The art looks pretty super cool on them. They're always usually pretty easy to play. I will have it back to ship, but I will probably back for all of them, but mostly for Turbo Drift because it looks super cool. And that's pretty much all I have to mention. Anybody else got Kickstarter things to mention or news things to mention?
Unpub, we're gearing up for Unpub 7. The information on the hotel information was released today on the Unpub website. We're working on Unpub 7 webpage that'll be showing all the games that'll be signing up and all that stuff. But in the meantime, we kind of got a quick thing up now.
I can finally get a room? Awesome.
Yeah, we're still accepting sponsorships. So if you or if you know a company interested in sponsoring, please reach out to myself or sponsors rather at unpub.net, and we will get you helped out and squared away so you can help us and help others that are trying to fulfill their dreams of having a game out.
Yep, and on that note, just talking behind the scenes, I'll be sending out some emails this week now that I have a few days off from work. So if you're out there and you've sponsored before, and expect an email from me, even if Daryl already sent an email to you, because you know you need to be there. There's so many people scouting games there, and it's like I appreciate that like everybody is there and like making it a huge thing, but like the sponsorships are what like kind of fuel that whole thing. And they also get your name, the name of your company in the manual and any of the little like bonuses that you can give to help support or like, you know, like a card that's like specially made for Unpub that goes with one of your games and everything. Like those types of little projects, like just really make Unpub like kind of a special thing that people can visit. And they also just make it known that your company is there, not only just supporting Unpub, but looking for designers in that area.
We both understand if you're going to be at Gamma, that's cool. You can still help Unpub.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, if you're at Gamma, you're totally in the wrong market. Like, as a publisher, you're in the right spot, but like, unless you have an evergreen title that you're just selling constantly, you're going to need new games. And there's just tons of games to pick up here.
I go around on Thursday before everybody else gets there and lick all the ones that I want. So.
Oh my goodness.
I'm only sort of joking, but no, it's just fun. You know, please come out to Unpub, and I'm glad I can finally get a hotel room. I'm really looking forward to it this year. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a busy March because it's like PAX is right there along with Unpub. So, but what's cool about Unpub, though, is it happens right during my spring break. So I got a lot of great time, a lot of the whole free week before Unpub do stuff. I will just mention really quickly, TC had this on here, TC asks, but it's a good thing to mention that.
I wanted to just make sure before I actually asked.
They are the new batch of rabbits, the metagames rabbits with time management, trader mechanic, and trick-taking. The trick-taking game are all going out to Kickstarter backers. If you have not seen your copies yet, you should probably be on lookout this week. And if you don't see them this week, you should get in touch with us. Get in touch with myself or Craig at greaterthangames.com. Let them know that you need to get your rabbits. So those are exciting. We've already got a few reviews out, like people saying they've been playing like over New Year's and shortly after that, and people have been really enjoying them. So looking forward to those. Daryl, you have something about a Panda Game Manufacturing PSA. So this ought to be interesting.
I have a Panda Game Manufacturing PSA.
Ooh.
Hello, everybody. My name's Daryl Louder. I am the marketing manager for Panda Game Manufacturing. You may be wondering at home or even sitting at your desk right now or on your way to work thinking, God, I hate my job. I love board gaming. Why can't I work in board gaming? I have some good news for you, friends. Panda Game Manufacturing is now hiring. In fact, we're looking to fill about 4 to 5 positions. So check out Panda GM, as in game manufacturing, pandagm.com, and click on the jobs button, and you'll see the details for each of the positions that we are currently looking for. And there's a couple positions where we are looking for multiple people to fill that role. So please go. I've worked for the company over 2 years now, and it is the first career I've had where every day I'm happy to be working. Everyone I work with is a lot of fun. The company's just amazing. So just give it a shot. I mean, try out the resume. It's literally working in the industry that you love, and you get kind of like a nice behind the scenes view that you didn't even know was really going on. And I don't know, it's just cool. So check it out.
You get swag too.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about that. But yeah.
That's how you get people in. Tell them about the perks.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's like, I actually saw somebody tweet about this. So they're like account manager positions or something, right?
They are. They're account managers. And we also have project manager positions available. So actually, if you speak a second language, French, German, Mandarin, Japanese, like we're looking for a lot of people to help manage clients that are in France or in Germany or in Asia. But I mean, we're also looking for it's work from home. So, you know, you have to be a self-starter, you have to be self-motivated, but we're also looking for normal account managers and normal account project managers. So if you don't have second language, that's okay. We're still looking to fill those positions as well.
I don't think you should be announcing these too loudly, considering, you know, there might be people on the podcast that might want to apply.
I urge everybody to apply.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Just, yeah. You know, I think you should have just already probably skipped the last 30 seconds. You know, you don't want to listen to game manufacturing PSAs.
Oh, look at that. The position has been filled. Never mind, everybody. Keep going. Check it out. If you got any questions, feel free to bug me on Twitter. Or actually, you can ask the Panda GM Twitter handle. That's run by Brent McKinney and myself. So he and I will be able to answer any questions you may have. So there you go.
Most excellent. All right. Is that it? I mean, that's a pretty long one. So yeah. I think we're going to wrap it up now. All right, so that's it for this episode of State of Games. As always, we love hearing from you and want to provide content you want to hear. So send us ideas for show topics you'd like for us to cover and new segments you'd like to hear. You can email your ideas to thestateofgames@gmail.com, and you can tweet them at thestateofgames. You can also go to dicehateme.com and comment on the podcast or join Guild 1903 on boardgamegeek.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter at dicehateme. What about the rest of you?
You can find me on Twitter at getlouder.
You can find me on Puppy Shogun. I also do a segment of called Deep Design on the Perfect Information podcast, and I'm super happy that they didn't hound me for a segment this first week of the new year, because I really was not thinking about that at all. So I'll be back again in 2 weeks with a new segment. It'll be great.
And you can find me on Twitter at FeldFangirl. And if you have not yet listened to this week's episode of the What Did You Play This Week podcast, you can go there to hear me go on and talk about the games I played at BitterCon-ish and whine and complain about backbuilders.
Hey, and Jess, I just saw that someone nominated you for Best New Podcaster of the Year.
Yeah, well, yeah, he Todd Kauk. Mm-hmm. Does his Potties Awards, and I was voted Best New Podcaster. That was such an honor. I'm so honored by that.
Well, that is super sweet. Yay. Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'd agree with that.
You're welcome.
I tell you what, thank you. Because of that, I'm going to increase your salary. So,
by
times 1,000.
I'm going to add another zero to that paycheck.
I am so jealous.
All right. Well, thank you to all of you for listening for 2016. We hope you continue to listen through 2017. Spread the word of the podcast. And until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
This is Get Louder.
This is Puppy Shogun.
And this is Spell Fangirl.
Saying thanks for listening. And may
all your rolls be sixes.
That was horrendous.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Daryl.